This is a Quality News Network. At Camp Pendleton, California today, a Navy corpsman pleaded guilty on charges related to the death of an Iraqi man in April. He testified that Marines dragged the man out of his home and shot him 10 times in the head. If convicted, the seven Marines could face life in prison. The Associated Press has reportedly obtained a sworn statement from a Marine sergeant at Guantanamo Bay. He allegedly bragged that the guards there often beat detainees. That statement has been sent to the Defense Department's Inspector General. The Congressional Budget Office estimate for the federal budget deficit for the just-completed fiscal year is now $250 billion. That's $10 billion less than previous predictions and below the White House projection of $296 billion. On Capitol Hill, Senator John Warner, the Republican chairman of the Armed Services Committee, has returned from a fact-finding trip to Iraq. He described the situation as, quote, drifting sideways, end quote. He recommended giving the country three more months before Congress should make some, quote, bold decisions. In northern Iraq today, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice visited the Kurdish region. She said that oil revenue is a long-term key in unifying an economically independent Iraq. Later, Rice traveled to London for a meeting to discuss the Iranian nuclear standoff. After more than 2 hours of talks, she and representatives from Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China did not appear to have reached a decision on what to do next. European Union ambassadors have approved a plan that allows the sharing of personal data on international air passengers to U.S. authorities. The agreement is designed to combat terrorism and replaces one that was declared invalid on a legal technicality. The Washington Post reports that although Congress has authorized the construction of a 700-mile-long fence along the U.S.-Mexico border, it may never be built. That's because of the addition of separate legislation related to its funding. It authorizes the Bush administration to spend the $1.2 billion on roads, technology, or even a virtual fence, not just a physical barrier. In California, a newly approved bill could allow disabled veterans to continue hunting deer and elk on Santa Rosa Island, part of the Channel Islands National Park. A 1998 federal court settlement mandates an end to the hunt. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Former President Clinton and the American Heart Association have reached a deal with several major food companies. They'll work with schools to make snacks healthier by cutting the fat, sugar, and salt used to make them. A day after Walmart announced its lower-priced generic drug program will soon be open to all residents of Florida, Target has announced it will match those prices in Florida. Under the plan, a month's worth of generic drugs costs $4. In September, U.S. employers added 51,000 jobs, well short of the 120,000 that analysts were expecting. Also, the unemployment rate fell to 4.6%, slightly lower than in August. Google is reportedly in talks to purchase the popular online video sharing site YouTube. Google could pay $1.6 billion for the site. Hitachi announced today that it's recalling 16,000 Sony-made batteries. However, the recall only affects two models sold in the Japanese market. A former Enron executive was sentenced today to 2 years probation after pleading guilty to insider trading. She faced up to 10 years in prison, but her sentence was reduced because she cooperated with authorities. Light sweet crude settled at $59.76 today. After three straight record-breaking days in a row, at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 16 points at 11,850. NASDAQ down 6 points at 2,300. S&P 500 down 4 points at 1,350. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's 5 past the hour.
now. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I don't know exactly how we got here, but it is Friday, and I am Bob. And aren't I tickled to be with you? Aren't I tickled to have you along with us as we head into the weekend? And, you know, let's wrap everything up in a nice little bow as we wrap the week itself up. Whatever's on your mind is par for the course as far as I'm concerned tonight. I want to start, though, my inclination is to start with, we've gotten into a habit of picking up where we left off in the last couple of days, and I've got something for you with regard, I know, we're all foleyed out, and the big story, you know, the Associated Press is reporting that it has become more than apparent that guards at Guantanamo Bay have actually bragged about beating detainees and said that, you know, it's just another day at the office at Guantanamo. One particular instance, they were prisoners were caught, captured on photograph, kneeling, shackled, herded into wire cages like animals. That was followed by reports of, you know, prisoner abuse, heavy-handed interrogations, hunger strikes, suicides. There were stories of abuse of one guy who was forced to wear a bra, dance with another man, behave like a dog. Damn, it sounds like the Republican National Convention, doesn't it? Where does it all end? Where does it all end? You know, why is it so hard for the people who are apparently philosophically opposed to us to understand the very nature of torture itself?
No, I mean, when they tortured you, did you talk?
Well, I don't think they wanted me to talk, really. I don't think they wanted me to say anything. It was just their way of having a bit of fun, the swines.
You know, that's it in a nutshell. The goal is not to make anyone talk. Nobody in their right mind thinks that torture is going to yield useful information. This is vengeance. This is pure, plain old garden variety, no two ways about it, ugliness. This is about getting back at a goat herder for what a bunch of the Bush family's business pals did on September the 11th. Right? Yeah. But, of course, there's more going on. Like I said, the Foley business is out there. It gets worse and worse and worse. And like I said, there is... You're seeing it now. This is going to be used... I've got some historical perspective just because I'm a notorious reader of books. And, you know, I know what was done during the Black Death.
Well, you know, the Jews are capturing babies and eating them at Passover, or they're poisoning the wells, or the Black Plague is the Jews' fault.
Well, guess what? Same crap, different day. Only the Mark Foley scandal is going to be used to attempt to demonize, and the ultimate outcome of this is going to be to encourage torture of, killing of, hate crimes against people who have sex differently than, well, I don't know. I don't even know if that's valid anymore. People who have sex differently than the Republicans would like them to have. Okay, so this is where we're going. The single, you know, we all know that Flush Flimball is a pill-popping freak. We know that. We know Bill O'Reilly wants to rub women down with falafel because we read the transcripts. We know that Sean Hannity just makes us go, ugh, because, don't even, no, please, no Pamela Anderson, Tommy Lee video of Sean Hannity. But no, the single nastiest, most vile, vituperative cretin in talk radio today is none other than the Savage Wiener. Here's what I mean.
You know, the kid himself, we don't know who it is. The kid, all of a sudden he's a boy, 16 years old. I read the emails back and forth. As I said to you, there's no excuse for Foley. You don't put me in a position of defending him because it's indefensible. He did it to my kid, I guarantee you. When the kid was that age, I would have been unhappy. Let's put it to you that way. Okay? But the kid was leading him on. I mean, this kid was leading him on. You know what I'm saying? You read these things. Who is the kid? Maybe he's a Democrat. Maybe it's, I don't know who it is. Is there a real kid?
You got that? This all happened because the kid set up Mark Foley because he's a 16-year-old Democrat. Charming, isn't it? Oh, but it goes on like this. This is the beginning of a pogrom.
It also proves, and it's a hard thing for me to say to you because I know it's the third rail of talk radio because they control the media. It proves why homosexuals cannot be trusted in sensitive positions, as, by the way, was the basic undertone in law in the CIA and the FBI for until the 1960s. They wouldn't hire overt homosexuals because they knew that homosexuals could be blackmailed and seduced too easily. They were weak, in other words.
You know what we get next? We get congressional hearings. Sir, have you ever owned a Barbara Streisand album or been a member of the Judy Garland fan club? I mean, I make light. I probably shouldn't be. This is going to get dangerous. This is going to get deadly. And people like Michael Savage are out there hoping that it does, because maybe he can get somebody. You know, are you buying gold? Gold is your best investment. Oh, and buy your gold and count it while you're sitting on your Swedish mattress. Oh, Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Peter joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm not gay, but when I was a kid, my Indian name was Dances with Men. but that's not really why I called. You know, I'm just folied. I cannot take it anymore, dude. I tell you, I've heard this crap all my life. You know, to hear it all come up again, Jesus. But so what I really, really called about was you started off the segment with the torture thing. And there's something that's been bugging me the last few days that I haven't heard anybody talk about. It just never seems to get brought up. You know, we live in the day of modern pharmaceuticals. And, you know, I know there's got to be something out there better than sodium pentothal, which is supposed to be truth serum. And God knows that's what, from the 50s?
Oh, look, I've had surgical procedures, Peter, where they use this stuff called Versed.
I never heard of it.
It makes sodium pentothal look like, you know, the cocktails after work. I mean, this stuff, it's a kissing cousin of Valium and that kind of, and, you know, that family. But this stuff, you will spill your guts and have no memory of ever doing it.
Well, see, that's what I was thinking. There had to be just tons of pharmaceuticals like that. So the whole discussion about to get the truth out of these people or to mine information to help us fight some sort of a war is absolute bullcaca.
Yeah. No, it's not that. No, this is for fun. I mean, it's the line from Dr. Strangelove that I used there. You know, I don't think they really wanted any information. It was really just their way of having a bit of sport, the swine.
Well, has anyone in Congress or anyone even said anything about pharmaceuticals? I mean, it just occurred to me as one of those, like, eureka moments.
No.
Well, it just, I mean, it's like, why did it take me so long to think of that? You know, well, what's? It's all such a shame.
We operate. That's part of our problem, Peter. We operate on their schedule, and we operate on their talking points. You know, it's one of those things that George Lakoff out in Berkeley is so good at identifying. You know, that wonderful seminal book that he wrote, Don't Think of an Elephant. Speaks precisely to all of this. But, you know, they want us to, okay, we call it torture. They call it, you know, interrogation techniques.
Right, to get some sort of an answer, damn it.
But you're absolutely right. The fact of the matter is, you know, they could crank a little bit of Versed into it because, you know, I've had oral surgery done, okay?
Yeah, it could be like.
And you're awake for the whole thing, and they're like, are you doing okay, Mr. Kincaid? Oh, I'm fine.
I see.
And you're completely coherent. Your id is in control. There is no prior restraint on anything. Ah, you want to know where the bomb is? Okay.
Oh no. Okay. Well, that's what I thought, Bob. And I'm glad you know something about it because the only thing I knew of was sodium pentothal. I knew that had to be from the 50s. So.
Oh no, they're much better now.
Okay.
Well,
well, that's what I'm going to start saying when this thing comes up. I mean, the whole thing's a sham, obviously. There's no argument. It's pharmaceutical.
No. I'm not tooting my own trumpet too loudly. But I think I hit it last night, and it came to me like a bolt out of the blue. This isn't about torturing Arabs.
Yes.
That's just the fun part. This is an excuse for rounding up the people who are illegally in this country and putting them in concentration camps.
Right.
And then we can have real fun, because it'll be with poor Mexicans and Guatemalans and Hondurans and Salvadorans and Peruvians and Ecuadorans, and we can torture... Yeah.
Okay, so we torture them, and we... what do? We medicate society in general and put them in front of a television set, and we give them false information that just sort of blurs together.
Right, now...
And
now, yeah,
the
now,
top Google search is Jennifer What's-Her-Face.
Right, but bear in mind, Peter, you know, we get to be part of that party, too. You know, it's not just Mexican women who use the scrub brush inside the toilet every day so that it's not icky when we go to the restroom. It's you and me. It's people who don't agree with the fascist world vision of this the god awful crowd in Washington. The Mark Foley scandal, if that's what we're going to call it. Is clearly being painted. You know, you heard Michael Savage there. This thing is being restructured to create the possibility of an attack and an outright suppression of gay people, liberal people, and you know, you start off by painting them. Well, you know, they're child abusers. You know, and George Bush is out on the hustings, you know, flying around on Air Force One on our nickel, campaigning for congressional Republicans, though God knows why they'd want him on the stage with them. Get away! You know.
Right, right.
And he's saying things like, and because I heard this in the Keith Olbermann commentary from last night, 177 Democrats voted and said that they don't believe we should listen to terrorists when they call the United States.
Yes, yeah, I read it. I didn't see it, but I read it. And Olbermann called that one right.
Yeah, he did. And but all of this works. These are all the different ingredients in a really, really hateful stew, Peter.
You know, we used to say, earlier in the century, back when I was a member of the Gay Liberation Front and all the different groups I've been through. See, I've fought this since I could freaking crawl. You know, it might be dangerous to go out too far out of that closet, because one day, you know, this, you know, things are getting pretty open, you know, things are, it's nothing like what's happened since the current administration, nothing like this. It's more repressive now than it was in the 30s almost. And it seems like it, maybe it's becoming a little bit true.
Well, remember, you've seen Cabaret.
Well, sure. More than one.
Okay. This is not the part where you say you have the soundtrack, Peter.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll play it.
But that culture that existed in post First World War Weimar Germany, people were actively coming out of the closet.
You know, that's true. Those were the gay 90s, if there ever were.
You're darn right they were. And the first thing, honest to God, before they got to the Jews, okay? The Nazis started cracking down on the gay culture that had taken root in Berlin and Munich and Heidelberg and before people were wearing little embroidered yellow stars on their clothing, there was another group that was wearing little upside down pink triangles.
I guess it's just easier to whip up a frenzy over that. Well, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, I knew there were drugs for that. I just knew it.
Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Bye now.
Bye.
And we roll on, and let's see, to David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Paging Studio 54. And we need a new Stephen Rebell immediately.
Yeah, no kidding. Stat.
Yeah, stat. I'm going to say something I don't think we talked about yet, which is Frontline's Return of the Taliban.
We haven't touched on that yet, and it's a brilliant piece. Aired a couple of nights ago.
It aired a couple of nights ago. I think one of the most amazing things about the frame of Afghanistan, I think, as Democrats and everybody in this country needs to pay attention to, is why do you think Afghanistan is right? Why do you think invading Afghanistan is right? See, the frame is invade with what? Rewind again. Invade with what? What are we talking about? Okay, we're talking about invading with an army. Okay, start thinking strategically in your mind, like you're Julius Caesar, like you're Napoleon or something. How many people are you going to bring? Okay, now, you bring them on a land. Okay, now how do you do that without conflicting with a different tribe? Okay, now we're in different territories. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand completely. And, most of the American people, David, will say, well, you know, I was behind, you know, even the ones that opposed the Iraq war now.
Even Randy says it.
I supported the Afghanistan bombing, blah, 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 blah.
She takes it a bit farther. She goes, I wanted to go to Afghanistan myself.
I'm not trying to be snooty about this kind of stuff, but you know, I've read the histories of Alexander and all of that stuff.
Oh, and I can understand also that
nobody's ever succeeded there.
I can understand also why Randy do it, because it's genetic, because New York is their home. It's her blood, so I can understand.
Well, you want to lash out at somebody, but frankly, if you want to get really smart about it, the way we did start in Afghanistan was the smart money, and that was special forces in small numbers go in, quietly slit the throat of the blind mullah, and kill the hydra by kill the snake by cutting off the heads.
I haven't seen the extras yet, the Return of the Taliban, but I'm looking forward. For everybody, go to PBS.org.
Well, I don't even know that that's fair. I mean, they're calling it the Return of the Taliban. I don't think the Taliban ever left.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we're the ones, David, who set up the whole thing where, you know, if you give us the name of some people who are Taliban, we'll give you $5,000. And the Taliban themselves are running out and going, the guy over there herding the goats, he's Taliban, and they go pick him up, and the Taliban guy's sitting there, you know, laughing and counting his money. They never left. Return my left hind foot. They never left.
Well, don't forget, Frontline has to sell ratings and TiVo recording.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to be too hard on Frontline, but they never left. You know,
right. It's just a sensational. It's something that Frontline does good. They come up with these. I can see them in a boardroom. What about Taliban? What about Taliban resurgence? No.
Son of Taliban.
Return of Taliban, like return to the return.
The Taliban. The Taliban strikes back.
Yeah, the Taliban strikes back. Taliban apocalypse.
But you know, it's some of the most difficult terrain to fight in the entire world. It is stunning and stark in its beauty, but you don't want to try to take an army there. You know, whether you're marching in as Alexander or the Romans or the British, the Russians, no one has ever succeeded there. The only thing that's ever succeeded in Afghanistan were trade routes.
Did you see that the camera? I don't know if you caught this. Did you see the cameraman got killed?
No, which one?
The camcorder guy.
Oh.
At the ending, it says, in memory of, I was like, damn. I guess it really is way better than you could ever imagine.
Yeah, and
the guy who got all that footage is now dead. But
died for it.
Died for it. Died for the footage.
We had the story two weeks ago of the woman who is she took a governmental position for the advancement of women's rights in Afghanistan. And she was like out getting, you know, a pretzel or something the other day, and a carload of goons comes by and put, you know, 172 rounds through her because she wouldn't wear a hat, because she wouldn't put a beekeeper's uniform on, for God's sakes. I mean, I'm not trying to make light of this, but right. These are crazy people. They're crazy evil people. They're crazy evil people just like George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Cheney and Condi and that. Crazy evil people.
Did you see Musharraf's reaction when they asked him, did you know the government took that guy away who was holding up pieces of the Predator missile from the United States? He didn't want to answer that. He was like, get me out of here.
I know.
And you just look at this and you're like, how can you as a leader in the world, it should be completely illegal to lie in office under these kind of under this kind of questioning. And if you have the evidence, I don't know, there should be immediate dismissal for everybody. But as you can see, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
And I thought it was poignant was when they played that clip of Bush in Islamabad, which is such a funny ass name for a country. I mean, Islamabad, you know. But anyways, when he looks right at him and he's grinding his teeth and going, "You got something to say? You got something to say?" Like he's expecting a he's in such a delusional state. He's expecting apology, and you look, you see Musharraf, and he's like, oh, I can't believe I have to deal with this a-hole.
I know. And you know, that's what's going through his mind. And but meanwhile, you know, we've got the surrender between Afghanistan, the Pakistan surrendered the tribal borders, and, you know, they don't want to go in there anymore. And the heroin production, what's the heroin production up to? I mean, I think a dime bag of Afghan white's gone down to, what, buck and a quarter on the street? I don't...
You know the funny thing about the thing about the media that I don't understand is there's a bigger story in the Bin Laden and Bush family than we could ever imagine. And what I'm talking about is, come on, the whole family divorced Bin Laden from any association? Give me a break!
We do not even send him Eid cards
anymore.
How many
relatives? Nope. Somebody should make a whole family tree diagram of all the Bin Laden so we know. Like, everybody on the scale and who their ties are with, just everybody.
But for God's sakes, there's pictures of them going to, you know, somebody's going to somebody's son's wedding and Osama's sitting there and they got the hookah out and, yeah.
You know, James Baker was on Combs last night. Oh, my God.
James Baker III of Baker Watts?
The Carlisle, the Carlisle Empire.
The guy, the guy who defended the Saudis in the lawsuit brought by the victims of 9/11. Sure, the guy who loves the Saudis better than he loves his own country. Yeah, that James Baker.
Right, that guy, he's so divorced from reality. He goes, I think we can win it. We can win it.
Well, honest to God, there was who was the crazy senator that inserted $20 million for the War on Terror victory celebration into the budget? It's there, $20 million.
You know, this goes into the whole. I was watching the trailer for this is another movie I plan on getting is Who Killed the Electric Car, and in the movie they talk about why we rushed to the Middle East. And why the electric car was killed, and the illusion of caring about alternative energies, and it's just such a deep story. They actually go to like the junkyard. Sorry to get off a little bit topic, but
that's okay.
They go to the junkyard and they see. So why are you smashing these cars? You know, it's like orders. We have to smash them, and it's a state policy or whatever. And you just see all these electric cars. It's the weirdest. I mean, if you want to talk about a weird conspiracy. This movie, I hope the director is in hiding, because what he pointed out was the electric car was demolished when there were orders for it, where there was getting a demand, a generation of buzz, and now we're seeing it again. We're seeing the rise of electric car from different companies that they're testing the market out. And you see, they constantly say, well, you know, fuel cells better, and in the movie, I guess they compare the two, and they compare how the lies of the electric car and how really smart people fall for this crap that electric cars aren't powerful, and they aren't powerful for enough for the whole country.
They show
a clip of Tom Hanks, and he's talking about it. He's getting excited. I guess this is like 10 years ago or something. And then they show a clip of a guy who goes, you know, that's true what they say. He goes, you know, they're right. The government is right about one thing. They say it's not going to be able to power the whole United States, but it will power 90% of it. And the crazy thing about it is they go into the, I mean, Bob, they go into, in the trailer, they go into the Humvee thing,
mm-hmm.
and they go into the funding and the PR firms, and who was behind it. It's just one conspiracy after another.
Yeah, I mean,
forget the black helicopters. Just look in the car industry.
Oh, I know. Hey, David, we got to roll. We're
all
at the
right.
bottom there.
No problem, Bob. Right. Later.
Later now. Take care. Our good friend David from the great state of Maine. I bet it's beginning to get a little bit cold there. Look, let's take a quick break. By the way, if you call in tonight, you may just get put on hold as I'm babbling along, because the fact of the matter is, and this, you know, just is what it is that Agnes has the night off. So I'm doing this all myself. All the magic is happening, and God knows bats may come flying out of your speakers at some point along the way, because I'm liable to screw up. But at any rate, if you want to jump in, feel free. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is the Head On Radio Network. And, well, me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
This war will be long, and this war will end in the defeat of the terrorists and totalitarians and a victory for the cause of freedom and liberty.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right. It's water saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to waterusitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Trucking right, I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other.
All right, we're back. I'm Bob. This is Ed On. And that's a classic. That's 10cc, Dreadlock Holiday. Oh, God, I'm disc jockeying. Okay, before I hurt myself, to the phones. We're hearing from somebody we haven't heard from in a while, and we've missed him. It's Friday, and therefore it's Andy in Wales. Hey, Andy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it?
I'm doing well. You?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm recovering from being ill, so nothing major, so I'll get over it. But, yes, oh, dear, it's a terrible time, isn't it?
It is.
The Foley Gate thing is ridiculous, and I can only assume in my bitter and twisted and cynical way that it's been sat on until just such a time as this.
Well, but they're blaming, the Republicans are saying the Democrats have sat on it. I'm beginning to wonder if the Republicans did.
Well, the Republicans sat on it, obviously, because there was only one Democrat who could have possibly overseen any of it, and they didn't tell him, apparently, so... Yeah, you know, it's a Republican scandal, but then, you know, hey, everybody, Wikipedia, Republican moral values.
Yeah, exactly. Republican pedophiles, just straight up at Google.
Yeah, it's just so open, it's unreal, but of course, you know, the liberal media.
Yeah, you can't say that without giggling, can you?
No. Well, it's either laugh or cry, isn't it? Yeah, the liberal media are just sitting on these stories because, obviously, if they say anything about this, then it's, oh, you're just liberal. Which, of course, is just rubbish, but what can we do? We're the media now.
Well, we're at least trying.
Well, yeah, well, that's it, you know, we're trying, they're not. What can you do?
We're trying, that, you know, but, yeah, I mean, you know, Friday afternoon, the news dump, you know, you want to sit there and actually find out what's going on in the Republic, or would you rather make sure that you, you know, you get your little crack fix and, you know, whatnot?
Yeah. Well, it's just depressing, quite frankly. You know, he's not the only Republican in the House or Senate that's a pedophile.
Oh, gosh, no. Well, that's the thing. There's a list now, and there's a great moral debate over whether or not Republicans who happen to be gay and who happen to have spent literally years, sometimes decades, supporting keeping other gay people down, whether or not they deserve to be outed.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know. Yeah, they do, because they're not. It's not like they're actually in. What they are is they have a clique of protectors around them, protecting them and letting them live, you know, one public life and one private life that are totally divergent things.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's, well, hypocritical, but then, you know, when aren't they? Yeah, why not? I mean, you know, if you have evidence, you can prove it. If you've had sex with one of them and you're a man or a woman, as the case may be, come out and say it. Why not?
Well, what, you know, I look forward to a day in this country, in the world. You know, it's going to be harder to happen in some parts of the world than others, when people can just be who the heck they are.
Well, it's really all that important, isn't it? I mean, you know, if you're not, well,
It's important if you're hateful, and you can use it as a political cudgel, Andy.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's the same as the race card. It's the same as every other, you know, possible way of dividing people. It's to get people who don't pay enough attention or don't think enough to do the knee-jerk, oh, they're different, them and us, them and us, and somehow conflate rich, fat, white guy in a suit with themselves as them, as us even, and everybody else who possibly may have sex in a different manner as them. It's just silly. And, you know, what can you do? Well, you have to talk to people. You know, the media aren't addressing the issues. Nobody's on the news saying this is unacceptable, really.
Yeah. Well, it's like that freak in Texas who is trying to get Fahrenheit 451 banned from his kid's high school library because it's degrading to the Christians.
Well, you know how that one went down. I mean, I listened to that and thought, well, he just hasn't read it. And then, obviously, he had read it because he's gone through and penciled in where the problems are.
Mm-hmm.
How can you go through and read something like that? It's not a difficult book to read. It's not particularly obtuse or anything. How can you read that, make a load of notes about where you find it offensive, and not get the point?
Because he's got his scanner on. He's got his, he's got his hate-colored glasses in front of his eyes. I don't think he was reading for content, Andy. He was looking for dirty words.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised if I found out that somebody else had gone through it and penciled in all the bits anyway.
The way the fundies operate, he very well could have placed a call to the American Family Association and actually had somebody who was literate mark up a copy and then send it back to him.
Well, I mean, he's like the omega of the kind of the thing that's afflicting the mainstream media. Because Michael Parenti said that there's three stages of modern, like, industrial journalism. And that's where you have an idea, and you go to your editor, and your editor says, oh, no, the boss isn't going to buy that story. It's too controversial. Bin it. And then the next stage is where you get to the point where you have the idea, but you think the editor or the boss are not going to buy that, so you don't do anything with it. And then the third stage is where you, as the journalist, just don't even have that idea. And so you can argue quite candidly, I'm free to say what I like, because you are, because what you say is what they like to hear. And this is what this guy is. He's got to the point where his pastor or whoever it is he follows has so, you know, controlled his mind into how he thinks that he's just...
Yeah, there's not a chance of any kind of dissidence coming from him. You know, the way what you said with Michael Parenti there also is echoed in a recent Columbia Journalism Review article that I mentioned a couple of nights ago. And they, you know, they were describing the way the editorial process works in modern America, modern American, at least print media. You know, the main the editor comes out and he says, the mayor's new in office, so let's, you know, give him a couple of weeks before we tear his heart out and feed it to him. Well, that gets translated down to the city desk as cut the mayor some slack. And by the time it gets down to the street level reporter, it's don't touch the mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because each individual layer is more, well, it's lower paid and therefore more nervous about the possible loss of employment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the problem when things get driven, you know, the target and the money target comes into things. The more targets you pile onto a measurement of like achievement, as it were, the less meaningful that becomes. So, you know, the more restrictions on a journalist, the less the journalist will look for these things. I mean, you know, it's not in the interest of modern media to actually find interesting stories, because interesting stories are controversial.
Well, you know, I don't think Brian Ross at ABC would have broken the Foley thing unless somebody had just absolutely, you know, drawn all the connected, I hate this phrase, connected all the dots for him. This, you know, these people aren't out there, they weren't out there hunting for this story.
No, they just wait for them to be dropped in their laps, because they figure by the time it's ready and all the information is parceled up and dropped in their laps.
And it's worth noting, Andy, that you know, at the same time that the right wing's complaining, well, I mean, you know, you heard Michael Savage there. Wow, you know, the kid was probably a Democrat.
Yeah.
Okay, but the fact of the matter is, Brian Ross has already acknowledged that while he won't give out who his source is, the source was a longtime Republican. Now, connect that with the fact that one of the most revered fathers of the so-called conservative movement, one Richard Viguerie, has put out emails and put out statements saying that the Republicans need to be removed from power because they have no concept of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you begin, you know, you begin to add one, and you know, what did C.W. McCall say? Put two and two together and added 12 and carried five. And the next thing you know, you realize that, you know, maybe, oh God, I realize I'm way out on a limb on this, Andy, but maybe there's a couple of principled Republicans out there who see what's been going on and are, you know, are trying to rot it from, you know, take it down from within, because they've looked and, you know, what should be a loyal opposition in the form of the Democratic Party ain't going to do the job.
No, well, there are bound to be a couple of reasonably, ethical Republicans. Because, you know, I mean, it was only, what, 30 years ago, that 35 years ago, the Republicans were kind of considered the party of actual moral values, and there were people that they could hold up in light of that.
You know? Well, you know, it was Tennessee's Howard Baker who went to Richard Nixon and said, look, you know, you got to quit or we're going to take you out.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the thing. There have got to be a couple in there, and Those people would have told Fox. I mean, who was it? Somebody told the FBI, apparently, there was somebody brought it up with the FBI 7 or 8 months ago or something. The FBI said, no, we can't touch it.
You know, what's really amazing when you watch all this right-wing coverage, and I don't know how much of it you actually get a chance to see, Andy. But
we get a few clips on the BBC.
Well, you know, you've got the likes of Sean Hannity out there who cannot say Mark Foley without immediately before or after that saying Bill Clinton and or Monica Lewinsky. We're finding out now that this thing, that the roots on this thing are so confounded deep that they actually predate Monica.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, this guy's been trying to attack young pages since he got into... I bet he couldn't wait to get from wherever it was he was first. I mean, was he a governor or a state legislator or something?
He started out, I believe, in the state legislature of Florida and then moved his way into Congress. But, you know, as it turns out, I saw him talk, you know, lauding his sort of log cabin roots. Oops, that's probably a bad choice of words. But, you know, I finished high school. I never got to go to college. I, you know, got it all by hard work and pulling it up.
Another one.
Yeah.
Every Republican did, didn't they?
Yeah. You know, where are the cabins?
You know
George Bush would have you believe that he was born among the sagebrush out in Texas. You know, no, he did. No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, this guy, as soon as he got into Congress or wherever, he's Senate or whatever, I can't even remember. As soon as he got there, he was, oh, yes, look at this. I get all these young boys to play with. I mean, this guy's a pervert. That's it. He's a pervert. Back in, I don't know, the 11th or 12th century, they'd have elected him Pope and everything would have been fine.
I can always count on you, Andy.
Well, no love lost with the Catholic Church over here, I can tell you. But, you know, this whole thing, I can only assume it's come out now because it's beneficial for Karl Rove in some way for it to come out now. I don't know why, but it is.
Well, we are rather obsessed with it right now, aren't we?
Well, that's the thing. And, you know, I mean, the World Can't Wait thing should have got more press. But to be honest with you, a day in October is not really the best day to choose, I would have said. But, you know, it wasn't up to me. But the more important march are the two marches that you've got in November. And one of them is to the polling stations.
Yeah, just like Chipperbeck said last night toward the end of the program. Right.
The other one is to Washington a couple of days later, whether you win or lose.
Yeah, big party one way, or be prepared to defend the nation otherwise.
Well, no, big party both ways, man. You know, it's a party to celebrate the fact that you won, or a party to celebrate the fact that you won. Just one of them involves George Bush being told, out.
Well, have you gotten a chance to see the Keith Olbermann comment from last night, Andy?
I haven't been to Crooks and Liars today. I've been quite lax.
It is, well, if my ability to download that clip was any indication, they are absolutely getting hammered over there right now. Basically, you know, I mean, take the time to see the whole thing, but what it boils down to is he out and out called George, I mean, he called him out. He said he is a liar.
Wicked. Well, Keith Olbermann is, number one suspect for the enemy, isn't he? He's definitely... I mean, I don't even see him as a liberal, to be honest with you. I just see him as a kind of, I don't know.
Well, that's a very good point, Andy, because it was a discussion that I was having a little bit ago. We want to see Keith Olbermann as some sort of liberal paragon who's going, you know, he's on our side. You know what Keith Olbermann is? Keith Olbermann is an honest journalist. And if it was a Democrat screwing up, you know what? Keith Olbermann would be on him like ducks on a June bug.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the key thing, isn't it? I mean, part of the problem with the media is they get through their anchor so fast that you don't have somebody that you can, well, you don't have very many people that you can say, oh, this person is, you know, totally bipartisan, doesn't give a damn, he'll go for anyone. You just don't get that so much anymore. You get these older types, you know, the Bob Woodwards and people like that. But, of course, they end up having baggage because they do, you know, controversial stories. And so it's very easy for the media to play the part of the Republican Party now. People don't kind of remember how things were when Clinton was getting taken apart. Different people.
But it was people taking Clinton, and you know, it was people taking Clinton apart over a sex scandal, and it's the fact that that's, as someone who voted for Bill Clinton and was pleased to at least see a Democrat in office, Andy,
mm-hmm.
Not doing as much hateful nastiness as a Republican would have.
Yeah.
It was frustrating to me to see the fact that they took talking points from the Republican National Committee like Whitewater that, you know, $70 million we spent to find out that there, you know, it was what Gertrude Stein said about Oakland, California. There was no there there. There was no there there in the Whitewater thing, in Travelgate, in the death of Vince Foster, and frankly, there was no there there in Monica. Okay, but you know they were really going to be Johnny on the spot journalists on that. But meanwhile, we got an illegal war in Iraq. We got Afghanistan falling down, the House of Cards falling apart there. We got the Downing Street memo. We got the voting outright fraud that is now proven scientifically beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And well, Keith Olbermann's the only guy that'll say anything about it.
Well, he's the only guy that's been given license. I mean, MSNBC have kind of, I think, woken up to the fact that, first of all, every time he speaks out against the president, the ratings go up. And, of course, that means that, well, they're still driven by profit motive like everyone else in the industry is, but at least they're then saying, well, hey, we can make more money out of this. So, you know, that's a good sign. Another good sign is the Fox viewership is going down steadily.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe people are kind of, I don't know, waking up to the fact because people, I don't know, they've got to at some point.
Well, you kind of hope so.
Well, no, I mean, at some point they will. It's just, you know, what we hope is that it happens before they're inside the camp.
Right, or before people are getting, you know, can't state it in the streets.
Yeah.
I mean, we are on the cusp of something, and you know, I'm no prophet. You know, I haven't had the mushrooms. I haven't seen the visions. But you know, it doesn't take that much to realize that when you start connecting things like this torture bill with the fact that there are a whole bunch of really, really hateful uber-fascist the right-wingers out there who would like nothing more than to be able to, you know, oh, I'd like to have about 100 of them Mexicans just to torture for the fun of it. It's not hard to realize that we're coming up on a place where this government is going to start acting with a very, very heavy hand.
Well, no, you're not far at all. I mean, you know, would I be surprised if the October surprise turns out to be a double parter and there's a huge explosion at the end of the month and suddenly it's all over, bar the shooting? No. You know what I mean? That's how close I think you guys are to it.
I mean, there's a battle group going to the Eastern Mediterranean right now, one going to the Persian Gulf. There's already one on station there.
Mm.
Why would we be doing that?
Mm. And, I mean, it's insane as well, because your own military have said there's just no point attacking Iran. There's no point, because all we're going to do is...
We will strengthen Iran, Andy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might blow up a few nuclear sites. You probably won't. You might blow up one or two. Probably won't. And what you will do is hand, a bunch of knives to a bunch of people in Iraq and let them split the throats of all of your soldiers and our soldiers and anyone else who doesn't seem to be immediately Iraqi or immediately the right kind of Iraqi in the right area.
It's a horrifying thought, isn't it?
Well, once that happens, then you get, well...
Well, then the balloon goes up.
Yeah, you know, the Gulf oil stops flowing. Saudi Arabia is suddenly, you know, deposed because the Saudi royal family are holding on, I wouldn't say by the skin of their teeth, but it's not exactly going to take much.
Well, remember, the reason we went into Kuwait, after Kuwait was overrun, the first thing we did was to fortify Saudi Arabia. Protecting the Saudi royal family, which is among the single most corrupt organizations, possibly more corrupt than the good old-fashioned Cosa Nostra, we don't talk about it a lot, but it wouldn't take much to topple the Saudis.
No, it wouldn't.
And instead of supporting people who believe in things like democratic reform, we're supporting the Saudi royal family, just like we supported the Pahlavi family in Iran, you know, the Shah.
Yeah.
And when you back the wrong horse, the one that crosses the finish line first is generally the last one you wanted to see in the winner's circle.
Mm.
Boy, I'm mixing metaphors like a salad tonight, Andy.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, it's the typical short-termism that caught us out with it. Well, caught us out. Nearly destroyed the entire world, is a better way of putting it. You know, it was all about, let's make sure we've got money coming in for the oil companies, and that's what it's all been about since 1960 or so, probably earlier.
50.
You know.
Yeah, back when Churchill was trying to strong-arm Harry Truman into deposing Mossadegh, and he couldn't get his way with Truman. Truman said, no, we believe in freedom. We believe in democratic elections. So yeah. Churchill waited until Truman decided not to run again. Then he strong-armed his buddy Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, you've got the CIA's first successful international coup. And it's by way of cheating the Iranians out of their democracy.
Second successful, Italy, in 1948. That was the first one. It wasn't called the CIA then, but that was definitely the people who became the CIA were the same people. Same.
Well, yeah, the OSS.
Yeah, I mean, it was exactly the same dudes. They just got relabeled, didn't they? But that Italy was the first one. That was the practice one, the prototype. Iran was the perfected and polished version. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, who's the most corrupt government in the world? Unfortunately, Bob, it's yours.
Yeah, it is.
Because who does the most spreading of terror? Well, good old US of A. Who does the most destabilizing democratic regime? Let me tell you something. The Soviets didn't manage to successfully destabilize a single democratic regime. Not without the support of America.
100% the unvarnished truth.
Yeah.
I mean, the Prague Spring, the Hungarian uprising, but it required a little bit of cooperation on our part.
Oh, a whole lot. I mean, if the U.S. hadn't wanted it to happen to you know, for their own propaganda and profit purposes, it wouldn't have happened. It's that simple. You know.
Careful, we're getting back toward Potsdam and Tehran now, Andy.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, look at the situation of the world as it is, and it's constant. You know, we're at threat, we're at threat. Well, of course we're at threat. We're threatened by people who don't like us.
Well, any indigenous people that wants to live and breathe free, you know, all that Emma Lazarus stuff on the Statue of Liberty is perceived as a threat to the business interests of the United States, because if they, you know. And, you know, Fidel succeeded, and we took a hostile stance toward him. And then, you know, so he nationalizes the tobacco, the sugar cane, and he runs out the Cuban corporatists. And no fair running your own government.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it, you know. And, I mean, and then you go back again, and Castro effectively was doing it in response to a democratic regime that had been set up by America when America decided to take over all the exports of Cuba back in 1898 or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, sure, and Batista.
And on and on. And, yeah. And we have to, as in we liberals, have to stop this. Because if we don't, you know, I mean, it's up to the people of America, because ultimately all we as Europeans and British people can do is isolate ourselves from you, because it's not like any American embargoes would hurt Europe. Do you know what I mean? You don't actually sell anything anymore except bad debt. So, you know, it's not like it would be affected. But, you know, who wants to have an isolated fascist America in the world?
Well, that should be cause for the entire world to go to sleep every night in abject terror.
Well, I worry that I'm not going to wake up because that crazy madman's got his finger on the button. But, yeah, I mean, on top of that, the long-term idea that, you know, your country is going to turn into yet another, well, I don't like to say Hitler's Germany, because it's not going to be the same. It'll be significantly different. But
well, we're going to have a much more profound religious component.
Yeah.
And we will not have the snappy uniforms.
No. I mean, the dark suits with shades will probably be the.
Yeah, it's the whole Men in Black look. Andy, we got to roll. It's news time, but man, it's good to hear from you. I was beginning to worry about you.
Well, I will be back in touch again soon, man. No worries.
All right. Take care.
Good to you too, man.
Later. All right. So we do the news, then we come back, and if you are so inclined, you get involved with the program. The program, of course, Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's in times like this the great heaven knows that we wish we had not so many clothes. So let's loosen up to the playful tease like all lovers did.
This is a quality news network. Guards at Guantanamo Bay bragged of beating detainees, including an incident in which one prisoner's head was bashed against a cell door. That's according to a Marine sergeant's sworn affidavit obtained by the Associated Press. It's now in the hands of the Defense Department's Inspector General. At Camp Pendleton, California today, a Navy corpsman pleaded guilty to kidnapping and conspiracy charges related to the death of an Iraqi man in April. In exchange for his testimony, the other charges were dropped. He testified that he saw Marines shoot the man 10 times in the head. In Nebraska, state health officials have confirmed that an elderly woman who died in late August was infected with the E. coli virus after eating tainted spinach. That's the third confirmed death from the outbreak. Nearly 200 people were sickened by fresh spinach, which federal officials now say is again safe to eat. In Apex, North Carolina today, nearly 17,000 people evacuated following explosions at a hazardous waste plant yesterday. The fire, which released a chlorine cloud over the area, is still burning. In Pennsylvania, the fifth victim of this week's shooting spree at an Amish schoolhouse was buried today. Survivors say she asked to be shot first in an effort to save the others. Four other young girls were laid to rest yesterday. Five others remain hospitalized. In Baghdad, the U.S. commander in charge of training the Iraqi police force says members have, quote, paid a great price, end quote. He estimates that more than 8,000 officers have been wounded and about 4,000 killed in 2 years. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice traveled in the northern Kurdish region of Iraq today. She said the oil revenue is a long-term key in unifying an economically independent Iraq. Her two-day trip to Iraq was meant to show support for the country's struggling government. Later, Rice traveled to London for a meeting to discuss the Iranian nuclear standoff. The two-hour meeting ended without a decision on what to do next. At the United Nations today, the Security Council warned of unspecified consequences if North Korea follows through with its planned nuclear test. It also urges the country to return to the table for talks on its nuclear weapons program. In Japan, government officials are keeping a closer watch on North Korea, which could conduct a nuclear test as early as this weekend. Sunday is the 9-year anniversary of the date leader Kim Jong-il was appointed head of the People's Workers Party.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
A day after Walmart announced its lower-priced generic drug program will soon be open to all residents of Florida, Target has announced it will match those prices in Florida. Under the plan, a month's worth of generic drugs costs $4. In September, U.S. employers added 51,000 jobs, well short of the 120,000 that analysts were expecting. During that same month, the unemployment rate fell to 4.6%. A consumer confidence survey for the Ipsos polling firm finds that Americans are feeling pretty good about overall economic conditions, but the RBC Cash Index results show a slip from the previous seven-month consumer confidence high. Hitachi announced today that it's recalling 16,000 Sony-made batteries. However, the recall only affects two models sold in the Japanese market. Hitachi's announcement comes on the heels of recalls by other computer makers, including Fujitsu, Dell, Apple, and IBM. Billionaire investor Kurt Kerkorian, who controls a nearly 10% stake in General Motors, says he won't acquire any more stock in the company. A former Enron executive was sentenced today to 2 years probation after pleading guilty to insider trading. Light Sweet crude settled at $59.76 today. And after three straight record-breaking days in a row at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 16 points at 11,850, NASDAQ down 6 points at 2,300, S&P 500 down 4 points at 1,350. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kim White.
It's your in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
One down, two to go. Turn the monitors off, Bob. Oh, don't let the amateurs play with the equipment. I miss Agnes. She needed a night off, but I miss Agnes. Let's see. Yeah, about 6 minutes after the hour, and we're going to go straight back to the phones. What do you say? And I want to do so with some bit of a rush, because we've got a call coming in from Puerto Rico. Our good friend Victor calls. Hey, Victor, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a hot day out here in Puerto Rico. I was out in the dog cage. For those of us that don't know, I'm in prison here in Puerto Rico.
Oh, brother.
So, but no, I actually went out to get some sun today.
Yeah, and you're a correspondent over at Powers and Morrison as well.
That's exactly right. I write over at, it's under the writings of Victor Lopez there at Powers and Morrison. I try to put my input in. I've been told I'm getting better every day. I don't know. I put out what I can.
I read it. I enjoy it.
That's excellent. I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing by Powers and Morrison and by the liberal, by the liberal leadership, and I just hope that I'm doing that right.
Well, my guess is you are. Yeah, you are. I mean, to be writing under the circumstances that you are, and to be coherent is, I mean, in my book, that's a great start.
Well, I think you have a more difficult job than I do. You know, I write it, and then I can sit and mull over it for a little bit. But you're out here every day, pushing what we need to be pushed. And, I have to be careful. Everything I write is read on the way out, and of course, you don't know who you might offend on the outside.
Right.
And I guess the one benefit I have over a lot of people is I'm already in jail, so they can't put me in jail for expressing my views. I'm already here.
Yeah, with you, they just withhold the fruit cup.
That's right. That's it. And the fruit's nasty anyway. Here.
Yeah, the fact that you can laugh about it, Victor, speaks worlds about you yourself.
Well, Bob, yeah, I think anybody that read over at my site, I grew up a pretty nasty childhood, I'm not saying that like I have an excuse, Bob. I'll be the first to tell you that I really screwed up, and granted, I'm not taking a defeated attitude on this, Bob. What I'm saying is I wrote those checks. I take responsibility for it. Now, the fact that they want to give me 10 years, now that was a little bit extreme, but, what can you say? We just have to take life how it comes. And I think as human beings, we have to accept, we have to see the bad and then accept it and find a way to change it, even if we have to chip away at it. I'm chipping away at it by going through the court process, which, Bob, let me tell you something. it's terribly long, and it's drawn out, and it's really full of crap. Excuse my French, but
yeah.
It's a lot of fillers, and it's just terrible. So we have no oversight in the courts. I was handed 10 years, and I think manslaughter is 10 years in the Virgin Islands as well. So I was trying to figure out who I dropped the stack of checks on. but I just took it in stride, Bob. I take everything in stride. I've done a lot of crying. I've done a lot of self-exploring. I've done a lot of questioning myself, and I think that everything happens for a reason. So we just have to see what this reason blossoms into. So, and I think I took up this writing mainly because I needed to get my voice out there. But secondly, I feel like there's not enough going on. I think there's plenty going on, but I think there's not enough people listening to what's going on out in our country. I mean, I'm in jail, so I get a bird's eye view.
Right.
I see people that have illegal wiretaps every day. I see exactly what justice is put into play, Bob, and it's a lot of injustice. it's a lot of people coming to jail that have drug problems, or a lot of people that deserve to have probation, and they're given 10, 15 years.
Well, it's part of the and frankly, I think that falls into the overall definition of a society that is sliding swiftly toward overt fascism.
Oh, sure, Bob. I mean, do you ever wonder when they're going to knock on your door?
to be honest, I do.
Yeah, and you have a legitimate reason. You know that I was talking with my friend Pedro. He's no longer here. I had him do a letter on my blog. And I asked him, I said, Pedro, can they do this? You know, I was asking him a little bit about the law. Believe it or not, when you're in jail, you have a better view of the law than some attorneys do.
I imagine that's probably true.
Yeah, it is. And he said, Victor, you know, the Patriot Act is worse than any drug bill, worse than any law you could ever think of, because they can imprison you and you're incommunicable. I mean, you can't communicate with anybody. And if there's legitimate cause for it, that's fine. But they don't play by the rules, Bob.
Well, as nasty as it is where you are, Victor, and you probably downplay that a little bit. But as bad as it is where you are, the fact of the matter is, you have access to legal counsel.
I do have access to legal counsel, however mediocre. And I can tell you, legal counsel, mediocre legal counsel. Is just as good as not having counsel.
Well, there's truth in that as well. But the idea of being, George Bush decides you're somebody's an enemy combatant. The next thing you know, you're in a prison, you're in lockdown, and nobody knows where you are.
Exactly. And let me see if I can express to you what feelings you go through. I was locked in the shoe.
This call is from a federal prison.
Yeah, we know.
I was locked in the shoe. And you know, you only get one phone call a week, and I just felt, you feel like slowly you start to feel like you're just nothing. You're a spiritless, bodiless nothing, and it's amazing the torture that your mind goes through. I mean, you're stuck in a room. They feed you through a chuck hole. It's a nasty experience, and I think to label that as anything but, and I can't imagine having to run strobe lights. Are there other torture techniques that have? Because I feel like being here alone is torture. So, and again, and I deserve it, but not to the extent that I've been given. And I think that those guys, that you get picked up out of your house, and you're put in some concrete mausoleum without any communication, that's enough to make anybody crazy.
Well, exactly. And by the way, I'm being told in the chat room to ask you, Victor, can you receive books?
I can. They have to go through Amazon.com, but I would really prefer the letters because I receive so many books every month. But if anybody wants to send books, it's fine by me. I'll read them. I would be better off, Bob, if more people would just push the head-on radio and speak to other people about it, word of mouth. And devote their efforts like that instead of sending me books. Because, honestly, I'm fine here. I get my three hots and a cot, as they say. And people who write me, they uplift my spirit every day. I get letters every day, and I can't tell you how much that means.
And your contact information's there at Powers and Morrison, right?
At powersandmorrison.com, yeah. It's there right on my site. Right on the site. And if anybody ever has any trouble, they can always talk to old Sarge.
He's bragging on you in the chat room right now.
He's my number one supporter and fan. I tell you that much, him and Mike Malloy. But of course, I feel very fortunate that I'm able to have the liberal friends that I have, and I think it's made a difference in my life. I'm only 25 years old. I was 21 when I came to jail, and I just think that this has been a big eye opener for me. And boy, I tell you, I'll never write a check again, good or bad. I'm not writing one, Bobby.
Henceforward, the money stays under the mattress.
That's right. I might have, it was just a big eye opener for me. You know, you think you live in a free country and you make a mistake, an honest mistake, maybe a dishonest mistake. You know, maybe when I was writing these checks, I knew I didn't have the money in the account, but I really didn't hurt anybody to the point where I believe they should have robbed my life 10 years.
Yeah.
Saying that, I'm not going to be bitter, because I've seen bitter people in jail, Bob, and these guys, they don't need to be out. They've been turned from halfway bad to terrible in jail. And
yeah, and it's eating them alive.
It's eating them alive. I mean, I literally see guys at some points where I just don't even want to, you don't even want to rub them wrong, because maybe they'll take off their head. And here I am, the infamous check writer, and I'm in with somebody that's committed triple murder.
You feel a little bit like Arlo Guthrie when he's sitting there on the Group W bench, and they asked him, "What are you in for?" And he said, "Literate," and they all went away from me on the Group W bench, the mother stabbers and the father rapers.
That's right, and I tell you, I've encountered it all. I have a column up there now. I have a column up there, Conversations with a Gambino. I've been with the crackheads. I've been with Gambinos. I've been with a lot of people, you know, and it's just amazing the exposure they give you. There's no differential between the mediocre criminal and the extreme criminal. And when you mix those together, it's a bad situation, Bob. And nobody gives a damn. The thing is, you know, when we're here, Bob, nobody sees what goes on.
Well, no, and you know, I'm not going to sit here and say to you, Victor, that the bad people that are there don't need to be there.
Right. So, Bob, let me tell you something. I say to myself sometimes, I'll say to one of my acquaintances or friends, Jesus, I'm glad there's jails. Because, you know, Jesus, because if I ran to this guy in the street, I would have to roll up my window and hit 911.
Yeah.
These guys don't stop when they come to jail. You know, they continue on. If given the choice to get into a book or get into mischief, they're still in mischief, Bob. But there's no reward for the people that come in and try to change their life.
Well, there's not, and there's also an ultimate, you know, saying, "Well, I'm tough on crime," is a great. It plays great with the terrified populace of the United States of America when you go home at campaign time. You know, I passed a law today that says litterers get 50 years.
But you know, the problem is, Bob, these guys are making these laws that are ridiculous. I'm saying they're ridiculous. They don't fit the crime.
Well, the federal sentencing guidelines are ridiculous because we put people in Article 3 yeah. federal judge positions because and they serve at will and pleasure on good behavior for life because they are supposed to be extremely learned men and women who can use their best judgment to apply a sentence.
But they don't. But they just.
But the sentencing guidelines take it completely out of their hands.
Oh, absolutely. Do you ever read FAM? It's Families Against Minimum Mandatory.
Yes.
The judges, if you read that FAM like I do, the judges are distraught because they, you know, they say, well, we got to give this guy 10 years, and we know what 10 years is going to do to you. I mean, things change in 6 months, Bob. I've been in jail for 40 months. I don't know what the hell's going on out there. I'm stuck in Puerto Rico. I'm from the States.
Jesus.
And I just think that it's ridiculous. I think there's a lot of miscarriage of justice. And I think it's just one more big problem that we have to face. And if we don't face it, Bob, these things, you're going to find out one day we're driving down the road and you go to jail. And you go to jail for something to nothing. And next thing, now it's a reality. So why do we have to wait until you get pulled over for eating a lollipop while you're driving and for you to do something about it? You know, and it takes people getting up their legislatures, and it takes people actually opening up their eyes to the problems.
Well, right. You know, you know, the fact of the matter is a lot of the stuff that winds up in our criminal code is, you know, born of good intentions. Poorly manifested.
For sure.
You know, mothers against drunk drivers. For God's sakes, this was started by a mother who lost her son to a drunk driving accident, but it's wound up as a bureaucratic excuse to withhold highway funds for the love of God.
Well, and you know, my parents were killed by drunk drivers. My adopted parents were killed by drunk drivers.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
It's a matter of life. You know, I would cry over it. I sometimes mull and stare into space over it, but. You know what? I never, Bob, I never let that get the best of me. I never let anything bias me to where I say, oh, those prisoners or those Republicans. No, I feel sorry for them. My father used to tell me, feel sorry for them because they just don't open up their eyes. But we can't bias ourselves to the point to where we turn off like mad. You can't deny highway funding. You have to be more smart about your anger, and it has to be.
Well, and you have to deal with the problem of the people who are getting tanked behind the wheel.
Exactly, and believe it or not, it's not just drunk drivers that are out there killing everybody. You know, I mean, we got a lot of problems on the street, and I was extremely upset. But the person that killed my parents got 7 years, You know, and it was just a bad experience. But we have too many focuses where you know, my father used to tell me about that the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Exactly.
You know, it just doesn't, to me, we have to really focus our efforts. So I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir with you on that.
Well, but, you know, you come from a place that's probably more valid than anything I would say about it, Victor.
Well, yeah, and I think respectively, you know, that I don't know everything, but they beat me. They're going to cut me off in about 30 seconds.
All right, Victor, it's been a pleasure. You be well, and you know, as Malloy says, watch your back, okay?
I'll do my best, okay? You do the same.
Take care, Victor. Bye now. Go by and read the writings of Victor Lopez at powersandmorrison.com. You might learn something. And you know, that's a topic for an entire 3-hour program, the criminal justice system in this country. I've long held that it boils down to the three M's. Then this is no money, meanness, and morons. That's the criminal justice system for the most part. You know, because we're going to protect the money. Look at how the criminal justice system went out of its way to protect the money of Ken Lay after he died. There was no U-Haul behind his hearse. But the criminal justice system is set up in such a way, he died before his conviction became final. So therefore, you know, under the statute, blah, 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 and some nerdy little lawyer with the wire-rimmed glasses is sitting there explaining why Mrs. Lay gets to keep all the money and the stockholders get screwed. You know, let's go to let's keep it rolling. Spike, are you still there with me? Hey, Spike. There you are.
Gonzo greetings, how are you?
Hey, Gonzo greetings, Spike. What's going on? I'm sorry it took so long, man.
No. I understand what international calls. Trust me, I understand. For you, it's good. Because if you're taking forever to get to me, it means more people are listening to you. You know, I remember when I first started listening to you, in about 30 seconds you could get on the air. If I got to wait an hour, that's a good thing. That means more people are listening to the horn.
Well, and, you know, I got a feeling as we grow, you know, it's funny. We started out with a phone system that is set up for X number of lines, but they've got one that's set up for 2X, okay? I got a feeling we're going to have to add that unit pretty soon.
Yeah, well, I think you're doing quite well with the new setup, too, at Radio Power. I think there's a lot of people looking for good talk radio this time of the night, and you're it, and... I mean, I had to wait 2 hours for a shuttle van to pick me up to pick my car, and the guy was real snotty because he showed up for about half a second, pulled away, didn't even park in front of the right house, got an attitude with me. It took me probably 2.5 hours to get back to the place to get my car. Trust me, waiting an hour for you is no big deal.
Well, yeah, especially kind of where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Well, I know you're a big sports fan. Let me start out with a little bit of a diversion for you. Are you all psyched for Sunday in Philly?
Well, I'm a Dolphins fan, but since I live in the Philly sports market, it's all I hear about it.
No, it's got to be wall-to-wall, Terrell versus Donovan, all of that, you know.
Even before this, I mean, all summer, all spring, it's like T.O. Palooza on our media here.
You know, can we just get him a set of 12-ounce gloves and set the ring up and have the hell done with it?
You know, the best part of all is I have him on my fantasy team, and I can guarantee he's going to play the game of the season, and... he'll have a great game against the Eagles. Even though I don't like the Dallas Cowboys, I got a feeling Terrell Owens is really going to just make a fool of the Eagles, sadly. As much of a baby as he can be, he is probably the best wide receiver in his generation.
Yeah, he sort of put all that Keyshawn Johnson stuff to rest, didn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah, where's Keyshawn these days? People are hard-pressed to even know him.
Playing for the Decatur Staleys, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But
you ever drive on the Schuylkill?
On the Schuylkill?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're naming references from my neck of the woods for sure.
Done a little wandering.
Yeah, Schuylkill's not fun. I take a back way down to Philly. But hey, real quick, going back to the pedophilia, the grand old pedophile party.
Right.
An interesting thing, I sent you an email, I don't know if you got to read it. A few years ago in the Poconos, there was a Republican district attorney who ran for judge. Now, here's the interesting part about this. There was three people that were trying to get nominations. You had to basically win either the Democratic or the Republican spot in the primaries. There were three people, two Republicans, one Democrat. The Democrat won, the Democrat won. The DA won, the Republican won. But the Bar Association backed the other Republican, saying he had the most experience, he had the most integrity, he should get it. He got the most votes out of anyone, but he didn't win either party won. So the Democrat and this Republican DA got together to kind of keep the guy off the ballot, and it ended up the election going to this Republican DA. Well, 3 weeks after he was elected judge, he took a girl to a Hillary Duff concert in Wilkes-Barre, and they were sitting in the second or third row, and he proceeded to molest her in the crowd with people with their kids all around. And
yeah, because, you know, 50-year-old guys, you just can't keep them away from those Hillary Duff concerts.
Yeah, exactly, with 10-year-old girls. And best of all, what happens? The guy claims to have been drunk. They did say he was drinking, but so I almost wonder if the Republican spin machine is basing this off of Mark Pazahanich in the Poconos and say, well, go to rehab and blame it on alcohol. Maybe we can make it look all right. You know, and the worst part of that with that guy was that he was also related to the individual he was doing that to, which was even worse than Mark Foley. And once again, it was a Republican. And, you know, people have said over and over, and these cases seem to prove it, is the people who are the most uptight and prude about things are the dirtiest you-know-whatters out there.
Oh, yeah, beyond a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
And this is certainly proven. And like I said, I just, you know, if people really want to drive it in everyone's head leading up to the election of the Republican Party is almost like the Catholic Church, you know, with covering up pedophilia. You know, Mark Pazahanich, he kind of got a little AP blurb. Apparently, he was just a sign of things to come from this party. I mean, what could be next? And as for Savage, what cracks me up the most about Savage is many a years ago, someone uncovered a fact that he allegedly was good friends in his sane days with Allen Ginsberg. And I believe there was always a little.
Oh, no. It's there to be found, Spike. I mean, you don't have to work. It's there's a postcard in the Allen Ginsberg collection at Stanford University.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a postcard from some of this stuff is just he went skinny dipping with Allen Ginsberg. But what did this postcard from Savage, who was then Michael Weiner. He was doing some sort of like working on a groovy botany degree or something in the Fiji Islands, and he sends this postcard to Allen Ginsberg saying, you know, I'm here in the Fiji Islands and I look at the Islanders and it makes me want to stick my camera up your behind. No, I'm not, it's. I mean, you can find a scanned copy of it on the internet if you go to. I think it's michaelsavagesucks.com.
I believe that is it. Also, I can't remember, but yeah, because I remember he was much bigger a few years ago. He's kind of died down because people have realized just how insane he truly is. And I guess that's a credit to the American people.
Well, you know, Spike, we
can't take him.
You know, Bruce, Dr. Bill, me, you know, we've gone hither and thither. We went to D.C. Bruce has broadcast live from different places. We went down and did the thing in Charleston. Michael Savage went to Wheeling, West Virginia to kill a cow. That's what passes for a remote with Michael Savage. And, you know, for the people out there who might be into the energy drinks and stuff and not know this, when, I can't do caffeine, so I can't do any of that stuff. But like the Red Bull and all that stuff. Well, guess what? Rockstar energy drink? When you pick up a can of Rockstar, you're putting money in Michael Savage's pocket.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he would be involved with that. He used to do the Herbs That Heal books that were big in, like, late 80s, early 90s, with, like, a lot of suburban moms around the country.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised he would be. And he likes to use that and claim he's a scientist, by the way. I'm a scientist.
Oh, he's got a Ph.D. I'm a Ph.D. I got one from Berkeley. I had to live amongst those liberals for about 4 years.
Yeah, you do a pretty good Savage, because I used to actually write down the crazy stuff he would say on his MSNBC show to keep records of this, like, just off-the-wall stuff. Like, I can't believe this guy's saying this, and he's getting away with it, and I'd write it down and put the date. So I,
but, Lord, don't it sell.
And, oh, my God, he's constantly getting book deals. I mean, the only person on talk radio who's got him beat with books might be Hartman, thank God, because this guy makes more books, I think, than O'Reilly or Hannity. I mean, he's up there with Ann Coulter. He's got book box sets and This guy, Hitler only had Mein Kampf. He didn't have a collection of books.
Jesus, Spike. He shoots, he scores.
Yeah, this guy's dangerous. Well, my favorite thing, I always love to say it, with the last show he ever did on MSNBC, where and a few weeks earlier I tried getting on the air, and I couldn't get past the screeners. I was actually trying to make believe I was a Buchanan person, which actually probably made it harder for me to get past them. He in that episode when he told the guy to get AIDS and die, the last segment they did was a barbecuing segment, and they made up a big Italian sausage for him. So the last scene of him ever on MSNBC is him eating a sausage. And I mean, the complete irony, considering what he was ranting on earlier in the show, what was his downfall? He ate a sausage and lost his job. So I guess that's why he doesn't like sausage eaters. I really, this guy is just too much, and I can't wait till he gets caught with some little young man that he bought from Thailand, because he loves carrying on about that. He seems to know a lot about it, and I think he knows a little too much about it. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Well, you know, Allen Ginsberg told him about it. I mean, that's it's strictly third-hand information.
Hey, any place where the capital is Bangkok is Michael Weiner's kind of place.
I gotta tell you got a million of them, don't you, Spike?
Oh, no.
No. You're pulling our leg. You secretly work the Poconos circuit, don't you?
No, I don't know. I do have to admit, though, my parents, when I was like 8 years old, let me watch George Carlin live on HBO, and they always would. So I've been watching stand-up comedy for a real long time. I started, like, I listened to Cheech and Chong albums when I was, like, 11. So I think I have a...
I think you had the same depraved childhood that I had. You know, I had an 8-track tape of George Carlin's Class Clown and Richard Pryor's Wanted live in concert that I kept hidden and had to listen to with the headphones, because if my sainted mother had heard the language that was involved there, it would have been all over.
See, with my family, I would tell the jokes to my parents. My parents were, like, really into, like, being pretty loose with that stuff with me, and I'm surprised I haven't gotten in more trouble in life. But,
well, you know, you're not done. Don't give up hope.
Oh, yeah, I got plenty of time to land myself in a... took my aunt about, I think, 35 years or so, so I got another decade to go here. Yeah, you know, and real quick, too, funny thing you mentioned, Wanted, Richard Pryor, oh, my Lord. I found on iTunes, along with finding RadioPower.org, there's a radio station on iTunes that plays just nonstop stand-up albums. And I would listen to the Richard Pryor Wanted album the other night. Oh, my Lord.
Oh, the monkey story?
Oh, I mean, that was in the 70s, and here we are today, and I'm 27, and that's... To me, that's still one of the funniest things I've ever...
Well, you know, Richard Pryor was probably the funniest human being since 1950, if not the entire century. But, you know, I was watching Blazing Saddles the other day, and it always blows my mind where I get to that credit, you know, written by Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor. And the thing is, you know, there's a certain sadness to it all, because you could not do... I mean, there are some great comedians today, but there is nobody who could do what Richard Pryor did and get away with it. I forget the guy's name, but he was headlining one of the HBO comedy shows or Showtime comedy shows. He had taken over from Whoopi Goldberg after she got, or she was like on vacation or something, and he got canned by Showtime because he referred to Barbara and Jenna Bush as gin and juice. And he said, this is like Nazi Germany. This is like living in Iraq, living in Iran. And you know what? He's right.
For the most part, the crazy people have taken over. It's pure madness. It drove Hunter Thompson to shoot himself, essentially.
You know, you always start out by saying gonzo greetings. You know what, Spike? I don't think a day goes by that I don't just wish, oh, God, I wish Hunter Thompson was here for this. I mean, can you imagine the article he would write about Foleygate?
Oh, yeah,
well, you know, Mark Foley
would be the number one magazine once again in America.
Yeah, Mark Foley and I were running around Woody Creek the other night looking for little boys, and oh, I miss him. God, I miss him.
That one about bestiality and a divorce there. I mean, you just imagine what he would do with another, and that was in Florida too. Say something about the state of Florida. I have a good friend who lives in St. Petersburg, and my mother's whole family lives down there. But I don't know what goes on in that state. But pollute in their water.
It's in the sand.
People goof on West Virginia, and I mean, I guess I can understand when there is that ridiculous ratio of lack of running water. But the state of Florida, I mean, it's like fanatics galore come out of there from all ends. I mean, and not it doesn't help too. Then we get the wackos from Cuba coming.
Well, see,
up
that's
there.
That's the thing. I've said 100 times if I've said it once. I'm grateful for where I live, Spike, because we don't have half the weird factor that the rest of the country has. You know, I can't compete with you know, and I'm not gooning on anybody. Poor little West Virginia. I can't compete for weirdness with Texas or Alabama or Georgia
or Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I mean,
God knows I'm not even in the same league with Idaho.
I mean, like I said, I mean, it basically West Virginia gets the bum rap because there is some, you know, poverty is bad there, but it's bad all over the country.
Like it's our fault for the fact that we've been robbed for 150 years.
Yeah, and jobs going to China hurts West Virginia just as much as it hurts the other 49 states, or maybe 48. I guess probably never really hurt Hawaii. Or Alaska, you know. Those states have other ways.
It's a hell of a qualifier, Spike.
Yeah. But it's just ridiculous what goes on in Florida. And heck, in the early days of America's Most Wanted, every time they looked for someone, they always found them in Florida. It's just something that magnetically draws the craziest people of the world. And unfortunately, some of the worst quarterbacks in the world for Miami Dolphins.
No, well, you know, you got a special kind of hell as a Dolphins fan.
Oh, I wish they'd put that back.
And, you know, it ain't, no, look, I mean, I guess we've come full circle. Saban ain't going to do it.
No, which is just...
Wanstead wasn't going to do it. Saban's not going to do it. You know, I don't know. Wait till Mike Shula's done at the University of Alabama.
Yeah, just an Italian coach, you know, I don't know. I'll take a Marino kid. I'll take a Jimmy Cefalo. Someone with a vowel in their name, maybe. It seemed like when there was a lot of Italians in the Miami Dolphins, they did quite well with Marino and Shula and Cefalo and Bonacati and...
Zonka, and, well, that's I guess that's Polish, right?
Well, you know, some people wouldn't know any better.
It's a vowel on the end of the name, yeah.
Exactly. That's all they need. It's just a vowel at the end. And everyone needs a vowel at the end of their name. And just add one if you don't have one. That's all they need.
Well, you know, some might take exception with you. They like names to end in wits and itch, and you know it depends on how far north you want to go in Europe. Spike, it's good to hear from you.
Hey, it's always great to call, and I need to call more often. I need to not let sodomy be the thing that brings me out of the woodwork.
You know, but you're right. From South Georgia to North Florida, you know. God, you know, it's all Disneyland now.
Yeah, well, the deprived world we live in.
No, that's depraved.
They're deprived.
You take care, Spike.
You too.
Bon appetit. Our good friend Spike from Easton, Pennsylvania. I need a break, and it's time to see what's shaking in the world of labor radio. Laborradio.org. Workers' Independent News Service is on the way next. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Hello. On the picket line at one of the 16 North American Goodyear plants hit by a United Steelworkers strike, workers holding strike signs shouted as passing vehicles honked their support. Greg Lipto, vice president of USW Local 904 in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, says this strike is about keeping good middle-class jobs in the USA. Lipto says Goodyear workers in 2003 sacrificed with concessions to help Goodyear get past some financial problems, and now that Goodyear has rebounded, it just wants to close more plants and export American jobs.
They want to close down three more union plants, and we want to keep the jobs in the United States. We don't want to ship them over to China, and we want to ship them down to Mexico. So they weren't budging off the main topic, so we had no choice but to walk.
Lipto hopes that the strike will win public support.
I hope that we get support from the people, and just to let them know that we're not asking for everything. All we're trying to do is just keep what we have.
Workers at Comair are calling into question the airline's bargaining tactics. Jesse Russell has more.
Comair pilots and flight attendants have once again told the airline that while they are willing to make concessions, terms of those concessions must be fair and consensual. In a joint statement, Connie Slayback, president of the Flight Attendants Union, said, "We all want to help our airline emerge from bankruptcy and return to profitability, but we have to be able to reach a deal that both the flight attendants and management can agree to." The unions have been under pressure in recent weeks to accept the concessions from the company in order to make bidding on the bankrupt airline more attractive. Comair has said that if it can't win the bidding process, the airline will most likely see large cuts.
France's Trade Union Congress, the CGT Labor Federation, is supporting 45 Teamsters on strike against Paris-based Arkema in Pennsylvania. The CGT vows to stand with the Teamsters in a struggle against pay cut demands, health care concessions, and retirement benefits cuts. The Teamster Arkema strike is in its eighth week. The CGT says French workers know that the company is trying to divide workers by national borders in an effort to drive down wages, benefits, and retirement security for its employees worldwide. Arkema makes resins used by Harley-Davidson and Nike, among others. In 2004, it had global sales of $6 billion.
Here is today's economic report. Jobless claims have dropped to their lowest point in 10 weeks. The Labor Department said 17,000 less unemployment claims were filed last week than the previous week. Economists are still skeptical, as there is little to show that would suggest a trend. Claims are expected to grow in the final months of the year. Also clocking in with a positive note was sales at major retailers. With gasoline prices falling, shoppers have been hitting the stores.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Better be careful. I'm in a mood. This could quickly devolve into me just start playing great rock and roll. You know, I don't know. Does it go into? It's got to be on the top 100. Tom Petty's "Damn the Torpedoes." There's not a bad song on there. Not one. Yeah, top 50? Yeah. Could be. Look, back to the phones. Luke has been waiting. Luke, I sincerely appreciate your patience.
That's no problem. Well, you were talking a little while ago about your records and such.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me go get my Dr. Demento tapes. You know, we can...
Oh, dear God. You know, I never dreamed, not for an instant, in all those years sitting in college, you know, with the six pack of cheap beer on a Saturday night, I never dreamed for an instant that I would that I would come to a place in my life where I would look at the White House and think of pencil neck geeks.
I'm sitting there going, somewhere in all my stuff, I know I have the Von Meter record from the First Family. I'd rather have him in the White House right now. And he's dead.
Well, you know, you bring up a very good point there, because I know how... smogberry trees. There's another one. Remember that, Dr. Demento? Oh, God. No, there's a point in there, because I was watching the clip of Jon Stewart from his job description thing. Did you?
Oh, God.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, you know, it's like self-inflicted hernia surgery to watch this stuff.
Well, the thing of it is, he wasn't making anything up. He was
no. It's
the word.
No, it's real. Oh, it's so real. But the thing is, I know how the right wing responds and reacts, Luke. And I could hear them. You know, that Jon Stewart. He's a smartass. You know, he thinks he's so good. I bet he couldn't do the job. You know what? I'm at a place in my world now, Luke, where I would gladly entrust the fate of the United States of America to Jon Stewart in the White House. Well, with, I don't know, maybe Secretary of Defense Stephen Colbert.
Well, you know, it's like, say, I was talking to a friend of mine, we were talking about movies to go see. The only one I'm looking forward to is next week, the new Robin Williams one.
Oh, I so want to see that.
You know, but let's get through this, because I know we ain't got forever.
You take all the time you want, man. It's Friday. Let's have fun.
You were talking a while ago about the liberal media. Right now, the liberal media that we see on TV is Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, Keith Olbermann, and maybe Bill Maher. That's it.
And frankly, Bill Maher's in question.
Oh, I mean, I consider Bill Maher, he's a libertarian. You know what I mean? He falls into it every once in a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? That's about it. I mean, I saw tonight CNN had a story during Paula, you know what her name is.
Yeah.
I think it was either that or, no, I take it back. This was probably during the U-Boat Commander's last hour. And it was like, what Bush's agenda is not being heard? And I'm sitting there going, gee, last week or the last couple of weeks when George Bush was doing a speech every night, Wolf, I didn't see you come out and say, well, here's what we're not covering and the Democrats covering. You know, it's like, Bush, why, you know, it's like, Wolf, why are you so concerned?
Well, was it Bill, was it
last week?
Was it Bill Frist that came out and said that the nation needs to be focusing on priority issues? And George Allen came out a couple of days ago. Well, no, he didn't come out. I mean, he bought an infomercial. He went all Ross Perot. He bought an infomercial on TV in Virginia saying, please, can we stop talking about my rotten-ass character and talk about the issues?
Gee, it's amazing. During the 90s, that's all you wanted to talk about was character. You know, it's amazing how all of a sudden now we don't want to talk about character. You know, talking about character, let's talk something a little different on character. I was telling you, you know, like I say, tonight is real time with Bill Maher live in Washington, which is going to be a beaut. Guess what's on at 10 o'clock tonight on C-SPAN?
What's that?
The Texas gubernatorial debate.
Oh, Lord.
E.T. Friedman, Rick Big Hair Perry. Oh, God, this is going to be fun.
Oh, get out the Shiner Bock for that one.
I mean, it's like when you see Robin Williams on some of these things. It's like, I don't care what he's saying, just tape it. It'll be fun just for the amusement.
Look, you know, did you catch a couple of nights ago his remarks on coming out of rehab?
Oh, God.
He said, you know, look, when you're
a standing ovation.
when you're falling beneath your standards faster than you can lower them, time to get out.
Well, I mean, it's like saying, you know, it ties into his movie next week. I mean, you know, that's what I guess we need. I mean, that's why Colbert, I guess, and Stewart are so good, because they're comedians. They know that, you know, the funniest thing in the world is truth. You know.
But you know what? I think Colbert and Stewart probably have one of the hardest jobs on earth right now, because getting funny out of George Bush. It goes back to the Dan Quayle thing, Luke, because the comedian I mentioned a few other, I can't remember who it was, but he said, you know, when the barber,
I know who he is, George. I can see the face. I remember seeing the
George.
The,
was it George Miller?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, when the barbers are giving away one-liners about Dan Quayle, it's time for me to change jobs.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I can't make any funnier jokes about this, because, I mean, it's like, say, everybody else has got better jokes than I do on him.
Exactly. It, you know, so, you know, but again, I'm deadly in earnest about this. Who does the Republican Party think they're fooling now?
Well, you know, it's like I say, I saw this thing, and you know, as like I say, now the news story is, oh, the Democrats knew it. I have two questions, or two things on that. One is, every time Denny Hastert talks about it anymore, we start to remember she yelling, conspiracy theorist, conspiracy theorist. You know what I mean? Because they've been beating us all over the place with it. Every time I see them now, just that's what I want to yell, just conspiracy theory.
Well, you know, how in the name of God, how, Luke, do Flimball and Savage manage to have any credibility left whatsoever when they're just making it up? Well, you know, friends, maybe it was a Democratic page who was egging it on, and a day later, there's, you know, it's the same talking point on the Savage show?
Well, the thing I saw somebody talking about, said, you know, they had one of these polls and they were saying, you know, more likely, less likely. And he said there was like 2% said more likely. And he said, where the hell do these 2% people come from?
Why aren't they heavily medicated?
That's what I was going to say. These people, you know, it's like, get the guys in the trucks. These are the people we need to be rounding up.
Well, we started out with Peter asking questions about medications that can be used to induce truth and induce truth telling. But there's better living through chemistry is available to the Republican Party too.
Well, I saw some. It was today. I think it was Tom Hartman was talking about it, and he was talking about the fact that one of these studies has come out that said that one of the drugs they found that they think will treat the effects of Alzheimer's, it's that little THC stuff in marijuana.
Well,
that it breaks up the plaque, you know, where it forms in the
and yeah, and keeps the neurons from making contact between each other. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's going to be fun when they say, yeah, what's the best subject to take when you find, you know, smoke pot? It's like, oh crap, not that.
Oh Lord,
it's going to be fun. Oh, how did you like the thing with Harold Ford where they challenged him?
Oh God, where they photoshopped Harold?
Oh, the thing about the Playboy bunnies?
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, he went to the Super Bowl Playboy party.
Super Bowl party, and one of the groups there was the Playboy bunnies. And he got criticized about it just a day or so ago, and he turned right back around. And I mean, this tells you how quick he is. Turned right back around. He says, I'm not taking moral advice from a group that covers up for pedophiles.
You know, that's what it was about when, well, you've seen the documentary from the first Clinton campaign, The War Room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where every time something sleazy and tawdry would come out of the Bush 41 camp, you know, the Begala and Carville were ready there just to, you know, break it off and shove it up sideways.
But you know what I mean? Apparently they were putting out the new poll numbers, and supposedly Ford has pulled like 5% ahead now of Corker.
Well, yeah, it is looking. But how the hell would you not? I mean,
I know.
I know
well, you
that.
Know, you know, he. Like I said, I think I told you this one time. Corker refused to go on Meet the Press with him.
Well, you know, you've got, you know, Spike was talking a little bit ago, and he said that, you know, we were talking about the weirdness factor. I got to tell you, Luke, you're going to be dealing with some, I mean, professional restaurant quality weirdness going on coming into November the 7th. They're photoshopping Harold Ford to make him a bigger Negro. Yes, they are.
I mean,
it's there. Oh God, I wish I had the link.
The one I liked was Corker's got this commercial where it's all these people saying he did so much for Chattanooga. And it came out in the paper yesterday that not all the people in the commercial are from Chattanooga.
there's the one shot of Harold Ford Jr. there where they've added a little sepia tint, but then they got the video one where the scary black man is walking at you out of the darkness.
Yeah.
I sent
an email on that thing from the Sentinel. It's like, oh yeah, about the letter.
Yeah.
I got 4 weeks. It's going to get worse and worse. I know that, but you know, that's just. The thing of it is, right now, I think it's tomorrow night they start the first debate starts down in Memphis.
Oh, Lord.
They're going to have three debates, Memphis, Nashville, and Chattanooga.
Oh, I'd love to have the keg concession out that one.
Oh, let's put it this way. It's going to be just so interesting, some of this. So.
You know, and you know what a Malloy fan I am. You know, Memphis is the home of Brother Sky Blue.
I know.
I want him at that debate.
He'll probably be out there.
Yeah, bless his heart. He's never heard of this program, but, you know, it would be a public service. you know, for somebody to get that man a full cell phone battery and just let him ask questions of Mayor Corker.
Okay, two quick more things.
Go right ahead.
We'll get out of the way. One is, it's going to be interesting when the FBI has to explain why this group crew gave them these emails 3-4 months ago, and they're saying they never started an investigation. It's like, Mr. Gonzalez, can you explain this?
Well, you know, and it goes, I mean, this is like, you remember the Phoenix? Maybe this is SOP for the FBI. You remember the Phoenix memo?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, we got some scary Arab dudes who are learning to fly planes, but they're not interested in landing them. And you know, this is
taking off. They just want to know how to fly them.
Yeah, just want to know how to fly them. Don't want to know how to land them. Yeah. And you know, it gets buried, and nothing's ever done about it.
Well, you saw,
and it's not the same national security level, Luke. But you know, it is kind of the same thing with the the FBI's had it for what? Really, 3-4 months?
And that was one of the ones where they're trying to claim, oh, these people, you know, this was the group that George Soros had sent them $100,000. That's it. I mean, you know, they had a bigger budget than that. But they say, oh, it's one of his groups. It's like, fine, let's go through and look at all the Richard Mellon escape groups. Let's talk about this.
Well,
I mean, we're talking about a couple of magazines the man funds.
Yeah, no. It's George Soros' fault. Did you not get the memo?
I know. But the one thing that I think is down the line coming here is going to tear into this more than anything else. You know who two of the people are that this is ticked off? That people know the names and people respect them. Is a fellow named Mark Class and the fellow John Walsh.
Yeah.
Because they're both kind of ticked about this. And these are people that people know who they are and know they don't, you know, screw around on this kind of stuff. You want
right, yeah.
And I think when they get into it, because I saw Mark Class the other night and he was ticked. I mean, he was just about to have the veins popping. You know what I mean? He was ticked, and from what I understand, Mr. Walsh ain't far behind him. And I think if the two of them get going at it, and just start digging in on this, that this is going to get interesting because these are guys that the Republicans the Republicans are not going to do anything to, you know what I mean? They ain't going to go after them.
Well, did you see the latest thing from Fox? So I guess it was yesterday.
Oh, that's right. No.
I know. No, they're predicting, I mean, I want this to be true. You know, somebody out there clicked the ruby slippers together. Fox is running predictions that the Republicans could lose as many as, get this, 40 to 50 seats in the House.
Well, I've heard some people saying that what this is the Fox is trying to scare the base.
Yeah, just terror. Exactly.
You know, we need them to be all out. You got to come out, or we're going to lose everything. Everything's going away.
Nah, just stay home, guys. Yeah, dear Republicans, please stay home. It's not
like,
going to get
like
any better.
Said, like you said, I watched it last night. You know, I mean, I'll be honest. You know, I watched it for a few minutes, and then like I say, the stomach gave up on me. I sat and watched the first few minutes of Hannity. And like you say, it's like when George, you know, would do one of his speeches, and within a minute he would mention 9/11. Well. Poor old Sean, he wasn't out 30 seconds and already had Monica Gate up. Oh, God. You know, it's like...
Yeah, and screwed up her age. Oh, she was 19. No,
yeah.
no, she wasn't. She was 22, and she was she had pretty well established the gig that she pulled on Bill elsewhere.
Well, and the thing of it is, it's like, yeah, and if you look into that, you see the person behind it was, there's Lucy Ann.
Oh, God.
You know, there's the one, who orchestrated that.
Yeah, what Bart Kopp refers to as Lucy the Bat.
Hey, I'm top of the hour, but
yeah, we got
to
roll,
go.
Luke. Hey, if you're out rolling around, do me a favor, run over, grab a chili dog at the Smoky Mountain Market.
I will, bud.
And raise it in my memory, would you?
Always happy to, bud.
All right, we'll see you, Luke.
Y'all hot.
Bye now. Okay, so it is news time, and that being the case, I offer you the opportunity to jump. Damn, this is like a Friday night little party, isn't it? So let's keep the party rolling. 877-443-2366 is the number. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I went down to Paradise Garage. Are you all right? I said, I'm feeling fine. I'm a stranger to Nirvana. I don't box outside my way. But when I stepped out of the taxi, I did not anticipate this feeling.
Oh, no, it's not locked.
This is the Quality News Network. In Apex, North Carolina today, nearly 17,000 people were evacuated under a cloud of deadly gas. A series of explosions at a hazardous waste plant sparked a fire there yesterday. It's still burning and is not expected to be extinguished until tomorrow morning at the earliest. No serious injuries were reported. The Pentagon says it will investigate claims made by a Navy corpsman today that guards at Guantanamo Bay bragged of beating detainees. The Associated Press obtained a copy of his sworn affidavit. It describes incidents, including one in which a prisoner's head was bashed against a cell door. At Camp Pendleton, California today, a Navy corpsman pleaded guilty to charges related to the death of an Iraqi man in April. He testified that Marines dragged the man out of his home and shot him 10 times in the head. If convicted, they could face life in prison. In exchange for the corpsman's testimony, the other charges were dropped. GM's largest shareholder, Kurt Kerkorian, says he's not going to buy any more GM stock. Also, his advisor is resigning from the board. Those moves follow the fact that the company called off talks about a possible alliance with Nissan Renault. In Washington, a former aide to lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who later went to work for presidential advisor Karl Rove, has resigned. The report says Abramoff reportedly lobbied her after she went to work for Rove. She was never accused of any wrongdoing, but the report indicates she served as a go-between. In Baghdad, the U.S. commander in charge of training the Iraqi police force says members have, quote, paid a great price, end quote. He estimates that more than 8,000 officers have been wounded and about 4,000 killed in 2 years. On Capitol Hill, Senator John Warner, the Republican chairman of the Armed Services Committee, has returned from a fact-finding trip to Iraq. He recommended giving Iraq 3 more months before Congress should make some, quote, bold decisions. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice traveled to the northern Kurdish region of Iraq today, part of a 2-day show of support for the country's struggling government. She later traveled to London for a meeting with representatives from 5 other world powers. They agreed to discuss possible sanctions over Tehran's refusal to end its nuclear program, but they say they're still willing to negotiate. At the United Nations today, the Security Council warned of unspecified consequences if North Korea follows through with its planned nuclear test, possibly as early as this weekend.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new study shows that those who smoke marijuana may be less likely to get Alzheimer's disease. Researchers at Scripps Research Institute say its active ingredient, THC, helps prevent neurotransmitters, which allow the brain to function, from breaking down. Nebraska state health officials have confirmed that an elderly woman who died in late August was infected with the E. coli virus after eating fresh spinach. It's the third death linked to the outbreak. A day after Walmart announced its lower-priced generic drug program will soon be open to all residents of Florida, Target has announced it will match those prices in Florida. Under the plan, a month's worth of generic drugs costs $4. Google is reportedly in talks to purchase the popular online video sharing site YouTube. Google could pay $1.6 billion for the site. Delta Airlines has reached an agreement with many of its retirees to change their medical benefits. That's expected to save $50 million a year. And Hitachi is recalling 16,000 Sony-made batteries following a host of recalls from other computer makers, including Dell, Apple, and IBM. A former Enron executive was sentenced today to 2 years probation after pleading guilty to insider trading. Light sweet crude settled at $59.76 today. After three straight record-breaking days in a row at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow was down 16 points at 11,850. NASDAQ down 6, S&P down 4. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Here I am. There you are. Okay, we'll finish this any way that you want to this last hour or so. I don't know. I'm especially high spirits this evening for some reason or another, and a little bit more than my usual smart alecky self. Is it because it's Friday? Nah, because I don't. You know, this is, look. I mean, you've heard me say it before. I'm not kidding. This is the highlight of my day. So this doesn't happen for the next couple of days. On the other hand, however, gonna run over for chili night in Beckley tomorrow, and sample various and sundry chilies, both good, bad, and indifferent. Maybe we won't talk about that. But you know, we're not cooking this year. I'm just going to enjoy myself and wander through the crowd. You know, it's a political year, so there'll be a lot of glad handing and that kind of stuff going on. I think we'll have a blast. So I'm looking forward to that. My beloved Mountaineers are traveling to Starkville, Mississippi. Well, they're already there, and you know, damn it, no TV coverage. You know, I mean, Mississippi State is suddenly the Rodney Dangerfield of the Southeastern Conference and can't get a camera into the stadium. So, you know, I got to listen to the John Racy-financed broadcast crew of Tony Caridi. And you're not Mountaineer fan, so you don't give a damn. But, no, I'm in a very good mood, and maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe it's overload. How much more evidence does it take? How much more damning does the evidence have? I said it was Agnes's night off. I didn't say she wasn't here. These are extremely sensitive microphones, Agnes. They just heard that. Bless her heart, I don't know. Agnes's night off, and I don't know. Maybe she's been into the screw top wine with the gals under the bridge. Heard that. No, but we are. You ever see The Name of the Rose, the movie? God, or read the book by Umberto Eco? Spoiler, now the movie's only been out since Christian Slater was like an 8-year-old, so if you haven't seen it, I don't care. I'm going to ruin it for you anyway. What it turns out is all these people get killed in medieval Italy because they were reading a funny book, and there was some religious goober out there who thought that laughter was poisonous and unchristian and stuff. And I think there's an element of that in this society today. I think there's an element of really unfunniness in our culture. Is there any, except for, you know, stuff like, except for the fact that he's unintentionally funny, do you think that Dear Leader actually wants you out there running around with a smile on your face? Hell no.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them, you know."
But I think we owe it to ourselves to giggle a little bit. And it's hard to do in the face of crap like torture. You know, this is the front end of the story from the breaking story from the Associated Press today. Guards at Guantanamo Bay bragged about beating detainees and described it as common practice, a Marine sergeant said in a sworn statement obtained by the Associated Press. The 2-page statement was sent Wednesday to the Inspector General at the Department of Defense by a high-ranking Marine Corps defense lawyer. The lawyer sent a statement on behalf of a paralegal. Man, this is some bad journalism. Tell me what the hell he was bragging about. Not the chain of command, for God's sakes. The lawyer sent the statement on behalf of a paralegal who said when she met on September 23rd at a bar on the base, identified themselves to her as guards. The woman, whose name was blacked out, said she spent about an hour talking with them. No one was in uniform, she said. A 19-year-old sailor referred to only as Bo, quote, told the other guards and me about him beating different detainees being held in the prison, the statement said. Quote, one such story Bo told involved him taking a detainee by the head, oh dear Jesus, by the head and hitting the detainee's head into the cell door. Bo said that his actions were known by others, but he was never punished, the statement said. The paralegal was identified in the affidavit as a sergeant working on an unidentified Guantanamo-related case. Other guards also told their own stories of abuse toward detainees that included hitting them, denying them water, and removing privileges for no reason. Now, bear in mind, when you're at Guantanamo, privileges include things like breathing! So much for all the laughter, huh? About 5 others in the group admitted hitting detainees, including punching in the face. Now explain to me. Now I understand this is not likely to lead to organ failure or death, so we can't call it torture. Hell, we can't even call putting jumper cables on genitals torture anymore under Alberto Gonzalez. But would somebody kindly explain to me what crucial information about upcoming terror attacks that have already happened, terror attacks that they might really be thinking about now that they've been punched in the face, is going to come out of this? Well, but it'll be the Lindy England defense. You know, this was their idea. Oh, nobody ever gave any orders to do that. You know, no officer and a gentleman, cue the damn stupid Joe Cocker song, no officer and a gentleman would ever order a detainee to be hit in the face while he was bound and gagged. No, hell no. Yeah, they would. Yeah, they would. Because this is a punishment fetishized country. Honest to God, it is. To the phones. Let's see who's there. Hey, you're head on.
This is George in Denver.
Hey, George, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
How you doing, Bob?
Well, you know, it's a little weird tonight without Agnes, but we'll get through.
Hey, I heard that you listened to Bill Moyers.
Yes.
Wasn't that great?
It was amazing. It should be played at it should be part
every
of legal
night.
Proceedings.
Yeah, right. You know, they asked Bill Moyers why he's back doing this stuff. They said, "Weren't you retiring?" He said, I couldn't sit in my rocking chair knowing that America is burning to the ground. That's what Bill Moyer said.
Well, you know, God bless him. And you know, the next one, set your TiVo or whatever, George, because you're going to get to see a little bit of the fun that we deal with here in Appalachia on the next episode. Did you catch the preview at the end?
I guess I did.
It's got a religious overtone. It's called Is God Green?
God Green.
And at least from the footage I saw in the preview, you're going to get to see some of my close personal friends. Our dear friend Judy Bonds is in footage there talking about mountain range removal here. And they show the mountains literally being blown up before your very eyes.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. But the Abramoff show was just stunning. It was the detail, and then the little round table with Norm Ornstein and Thomas Frank at the end, and you've got this guy who's very obviously a liberal and a hyper-conservative sitting there, both saying Washington, D.C. is a sick, 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 sick place right now.
Bill Moyers did a beautiful job on that piece.
He did. It's real journalism, and that's, you know, that's kind of the thing that happens, George, when you see commentary from the likes of Keith Olbermann or you see Bill Moyers coming back, and you know they're not. You know, the right wing would have us believe that this is because they don't like George Bush. I don't buy that for a minute. What they don't like is a country that is becoming pathologically ill.
And that Tom DeLay, what a devil. Him,
yeah.
And his wife.
Oh.
That thing he calls his wife.
Well, and then that was, you know, I wish, I don't know, maybe they could show it on the Jumbotron before a NASCAR race or something. I want America to see the story of the Marianas sweatshops. And that was one of the most beneficial things out of that Bill Moyers piece was that it laid that thing out in graphic detail that even a fundamentalist can understand.
Yeah.
And you know, we're getting to a point, if that kind of information gets out, you know, I saw a story earlier today saying that fundamentalism in this country is absolutely in a flop sweat. Because, one, it looks like their voters are going to start voting for Democrats. And, two, their children, when they get out of the fundy churches, never come back. I mean, they've called a summit over this. And, you know, if you could get a few fundies to see Tom DeLay and hear his voice saying, well, when they took my mugshot, I just wanted to let them see Jesus. You know, are these people aren't that stupid? They're not going to buy this stuff, are they?
I hope not. I tried to call you last night. I was going to give you my progress report. I decided 6 months ago, this October 5th, no matter what I'm doing, I'm dropping it, and I'm going out to march.
Yeah.
So my choices were go down to the Capitol, which is kind of hard to get to, you know, and. Or there was like an old folks thing kind of close by. And so neither one of those, I thought, well, you know what I'm going to have to do then? I'm just going to have to do my own all alone. So I made a picket sign and, World Can't Wait. They said, drive out the Bush regime. That's what they wanted you to put on their
right.
Picket. So for Mike Malloy, I put drive out the Bush crime family.
Attaboy.
And I left my house. And I walked over to three of my neighbors on my block that are liberal, and I showed them my sign, told them what I was up to, and then I marched up the street to the busy street, and I walked about four blocks over to our King Supers at a bit real busy cross road intersection, and I stood there for 2.5 hours with my sign. And the first hour I was there, it was 50-50. 50% were just screaming at me, waving, real happy. And the other 50% were flipping me off and looking like they wanted to kill me. And it was scary to see.
Well, it is. You know, the 50% that don't agree with you, why do they feel the need to flip you off or scream or anything like that? Why not just drive by?
Well, and now in my second hour, it got much better for our side. You know, a lot more people were honking and happy. But there were a couple people that were, when they flipped me off and the look on their face, I mean, it was kind of scary.
Well, and for good reason, because this, you know, the fact that they feel like they need to do something like that, George, says that there is something going on in their character that you have a darn good reason for being scared of.
Yeah. You know, you'd think this many years into this hell that we're in, that these people would start sinking into their thick skulls, but evidently it hasn't from what.
Well, I don't understand some of these people. I mean, I've tried to reach out to some of them. I've tried to get them on the program. I mean, sure, I lose my temper a little bit and get a little wacky, get a little crazy from time to time. But I've never been rude to a caller or a guest on this program. And I have begged on bended knee to get right-wingers on this program. And, George, they won't come anymore. You know, when was the last time you saw Rush Limbaugh actually debating somebody on the other side? You know, he got that free speech thing on CBS with Katie Couric, and you know, he had to do it setting down preconditions that no one would be allowed to come on and follow him and refute anything that he said. These, you know, the real hardcores, they cannot participate in the marketplace of ideas anymore.
Hey, don't get me started on Katie Couric.
No, please start.
Would you have sold your soul for $1.5 million a month? Because she did.
Well, you know, I'm not. You know, I would expect her to.
Yeah.
But the other side of that is that what's wrong with CBS that they think that she's on the same plane with Cronkite and Rather and Murrow?
It's all a gimmick. You know, before they got her, they had those other two supermodels, Trish Reagan and somebody else. They're like supermodels, and they're probably paying them a couple $1 million a month too.
Well, I'll make sure I bring the chat room up real quick while I say this, because I'm going to catch hell for this. There is a sort of a sexism that is at work in this nation, George. You ever walk in, you know, you're in Denver, right?
Right.
I'm sure there's a corner bar somewhere in Denver, you know, one of the old style neighborhood type taverns. And you go in there and there was this big burly old guy with an apron around his waist. And, you know, he could tell you the difference between this bourbon and that bourbon, or, you know, this gin and that gin, or he knew what had happened in the world of sport or politics or anything you wanted to talk about. Well, now, you know, most bars of chain locations, you walk in and they have a team of very beautiful women behind the bar. Okay, and they're there for a reason, and I'm not talking about their drink mixing skills or anything, but it's a pure marketing decision that has been made that, you know, people don't want to talk to people anymore. We just want to sit and look.
Yeah,
and that's the same, and that's, I personally think that's the same theory that's at work behind the hiring of Katie Couric, because she's not a journalist. Not by any stretch of the imagination. I don't, you know, she's been on the Today Show since God was a baby. When did she ever get out and do journalism? You know, when did she ever stick a microphone in a corrupt politician's face and ask, "Sir, how dare you?" Never.
But it's like CBS is rushing to the bottom. They're having a race to the bottom. Viacom or whatever.
Yeah. Vivendi owns Viacom, sure.
Hey, there was one last thing I wanted to say to you. Have you ever seen the movie Brazil?
Oh, yes.
De Niro?
Oh, yeah, and what was it? Who directed that? One of the Pythons.
Yeah, one of the Pythons. I don't know his name either. A friend has my movie, so I couldn't tell you. But that was a great movie, wasn't it? And the way I found it was Robert De Niro was like on the Today Show saying, "Why won't they let us release this? They won't let us release our movie." But they finally did get it released. You know, that movie, the original name, the name they were first considering was calling it 1984 and a half.
And well, it's so true. You know, the guy's a renegade plumber, isn't he? That's what it is. De Niro plays a renegade plumber.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, who goes out and fixes people's pipes without state permission.
Yeah. It's a good movie, and it's worth looking at.
Well, it's a wonderful movie. It's out of, now, do you have it on DVD?
No, I have it on tape. Just VHS.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to go out and find it. I remember the soundtrack with that voice just screaming Brazil. You know, I don't sing on the program, George. But you know, that's a world we're walking into, and it was always the small government. You know, the Republicans who said, you know, and Ronald Reagan. God, I remember that old fool sitting there. We're gonna get government off your back. And all, you know, and they didn't. They not only got on our back, they went in the bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're verging on a 1984 world if we're not already there. We're smack dab in the middle of a Brazil kind of world.
They're using that as a roadmap for our future.
Well, exactly. You know, I there's a bunch of movies out there. I think Susan and I, Susan from Columbia City, Oregon, and I were talking one evening, and I said, you know, I can't watch Doctor Strangelove anymore because it's not funny now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And great books like Catch 22. I got the idea that, you know, what, you know, one of these right wing think tanks, George, you know, with the Wolfowitzes and the Pearls and all these other creepy people, they were actually reading and watching this stuff, thinking that it was serious drama or you know, some sort of a field manual, because they're operating out of it now. I don't know if you have you ever read Catch 22?
No, I haven't.
There is a passage in there where there's a young officer who gets seconded to the mess detail, and he goes into business for himself, and it's called M&M Enterprises, and he buys eggs in Malta for 4 cents and sells them in Pianosa for 5 cents, and he buys them for 5 cents and he sells them for 4 cents, and he makes a profit for the syndicate, and everybody's got a share, and it's Enron.
Yeah. Well, in Brazil, everywhere you go, they've got ductwork coming out of the ceiling everywhere. And it's Brown and Root. You know what I mean? It's a duct company.
Yeah.
It's got the Brown and Root contract in the future, you know, and they got ductwork running everywhere, and it's pretty funny. That's a good movie.
Oh, it's a wonderful movie. That might be one for the weekend.
But that's all I had.
Well, I'm so proud that you were able to get out and go do your protest of one, man. You know that.
Yeah.
It's what I was talking about last night. It's one thing to stand in a group of 1,000 or 100,000. When you are out there all by yourself,
it was a learning experience.
It had to be.
I was really happy I did it. Really happy I did it. And a lot of people that drove by were real happy I did it. And I was kind of thinking, because I was there 2.5 hours. And everybody that left the King Supers had to go by me. So I was thinking, I wonder how many people will be inspired to stand up, start standing up, and make a sign.
Well, I hope they were. I sincerely hope they were.
I do, too.
George, thank you very kindly.
But you have a good night, Bob.
And a great weekend to you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
You know, that's courage. Honest to God, that is courage. You know, that's when you're willing to go out there and stand by yourself and face right-wing weirdos. You know what I mean? God, I love Dr. Strangelove. Onward to the phones, and let's see who we've got here. Hey, you're head on.
Bob.
Yes.
How you doing? This is Ed.
Hey, Ed, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just really called to listen in, but I couldn't help but think about what you said about Katie Kurt and had, you know, people sticking that mic up in people's face. The only person she ever done that to was a good man, and that was, and the name has left me, the one that ran for president, him and Edwards.
Oh, yeah. Carrie, sure.
Yeah, she tried to make a fool out of him, make a name for herself. But you're talking about women and their beauty, and it is, you know, women are selling herself out because women are more beautiful as they are instead of going behind a bar and putting herself on exhibition in that way.
Well, I'm not suggesting for a moment that a guy is better than a female as a bartender or anything like that. I wouldn't dream of doing it.
I understand that.
But I'm talking about the because I've been through this. The corporate mentality that says we're going to put someone behind a bar for the specific reason of selling more booze as opposed to, I don't know, as opposed to being what a bar is supposed to be.
Well, that's the mentality of a Republican. Jack Fairchild used to make mining equipment. He would go in and give the barmaids a tear up $100 bill, tear it in half, and give them half of it, and tell them, you treat my men right, you get the other half.
Oh,
I mean, that's the mentality. You know, that's the lowest type of of human being. Plus, you know, when he had his mining equipment exhibition, he had women stripped down to nothing. You know, what did that have to do with coal mining? It's just it's
well, you know, what is the girl in the bikini have to do with the, you know, the new Cadillac SUV? But you know, you go to any car show, Ed, and right there.
Yeah, and you know, I would have no intention if I went to a car show, and maybe I'm past my age, but I have no use, you know, for that kind of stuff. If I want to look at the women, I'll go where they're not half naked, and if I wanted to go to a car show, I would be going to look at the cars.
Right.
You know, I have an interest in them. And whatever the product is on the market, a woman wouldn't sell it to me by being in a bikini. But as far as Katie Kurt, you know, I just don't see nothing she has to offer anyway. I don't see one thing.
I am at real risk of sounding like some sort of a right winger, Ed, in criticizing her along those lines. But I've actually watched a couple of, because you know I want to be fair about things. I've watched a couple of videotape portions of the news, and all I keep coming up with is, why is that woman there?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I can think of other women that I would give that job to,
oh,
okay?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not trying to be overtly sexist about this. Maybe there's a little bit of the stuff that just rides under the surface that's coming through. I can't help that. I'm trying.
Well,
but
I can think of two right off. Is one of them is on Lou Dobbs' show that does a good job, I think. And another one is the English, I think Dave or Bill Maher had her on his program the other night, and I can't think of her name, but I think she's English, and she's been right there in Iraq and the other places that were really hot spots. And
well, I'd give the anchor chair at CBS to Christiane Amanpour in a minute.
Yeah, that's who I'm talking about. You figured it out. I couldn't think of her name. But you might have seen Bill Maher. He had her on that show, and she seems brilliant. We're not talking about downing women for being news, so-called news anchors. But she's not, and you know, I'm not down on.
Well, no, they obviously CBS is now selling its evening news as an entertainment product.
Aren't they all? I mean, look at our local station here, Oak Hill. A lot of it is they got the dog pound people on there. They got everything but good hard news. You cannot get, you know, what do you expect out of Republican-owned stations and news media? And I said years ago that we were going to lose the right to good communications and well-versed people because Republicans was taking over all of them. I remember the one, I think the station is WON now, Chicago.
WGN, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be owned by workers. Or by unions or whatever, you know, other than corporation. And that's one place you could get good, solid news. But now, you know, news, you either got some two-bit nothings from Hollywood on there with very little or come close to, you know, might as well not have nothing on, or talking about their dogs and that type of, you know, that that type of stuff. I'd rather go out and under my cherry tree and watch a bird mate than I would watch that junk. it's a joke, the stuff they're calling news. And, you know, even CNN is the only chance that you got to get anything halfway straight. And I think it's compromising it.
Oh, CNN's profoundly compromised. All you have to do is watch an afternoon with Wolf Blitzer and you know that.
Yeah. And, you know, the closest thing, of course, I don't like one subject he deals with, but for a Republican, I listen to Lou Dobbs sometimes, and he's...
Well, my only problem with Lou Dobbs, Ed, is that he's a little late to the game.
Yeah.
You know, because he was out there, you know, he knew what a doofus monkey George Bush was, and he was out there beating the George Bush drum for all he was worth in 2004.
Yeah. Well, but let's look at it on the other hand. I'm talking about what you've done for me. You know, a couple years ago, you've changed my mind on one subject with patience and explanation and just the attitude. And so I've done a little turnaround on the position that I had that I was pretty firm on. So I certainly am not challenging you. But am I to be condemned because I was wrong once?
No, that is a daggum good point. And maybe I should, if somebody sees the light go, you know, if Lou Dobbs has seen the light go on and he's willing to step forward on it, maybe we give him a chance.
Yeah. Well, I don't agree with him.
Agree with him on the business with immigration, but you know he's spot on about the outsourcing of jobs. He's dead on about corporate irresponsibility. What I want to see, you know, what I want to see out of him though is real action.
Yeah, I mean, and keep plowing ahead. Don't back off now. But that gal he's got on there with him, whoever she is. I think she's got her head pretty much in the right place from what I can...
Are we talking about Kitty Pilgrim?
I can't think of her name.
I can't either.
She's dark-headed, I know that, but I don't watch them every night.
Right.
Usually, if it's pretty, I'm outside doing something. But I'm talking about when I do hear them, it seems like it's pretty heads up. I mean, they don't try to cover up or if they have, you need to point that out to me too. But I'm at a position with him. I'm still waiting to see. My attitude is I'm going to wait and see if you change.
Yeah.
And if you do, then I'll be one of them guys that when he puts the numbers on there that you can call into, I will. But so far, I don't agree all the way with his immigration policy either. But the real news, real facts, and in depth are programs like that is on Head On all around the clock, whatever time you can turn it on and get it. I think that is your hardcore. And I'm not after looking at some movie star with a dog holding a little dog up or something like that. That is sick. Those people, they are not in this world.
No,
they're not in our world, Bob. They're somewhere else. And somebody that can pay $8,000 for a dog collar, a diamond dog collar, when there's people that are homeless and people in these other countries like
the Dominican Republic. The dime a day countries.
Yeah. Where are they at? I mean, where in the world?
You know, and the funny thing is the people who live those high dollar lifestyles that actually go out and try to do something and try to give a damn are routinely run down by the right wing for doing so. Angelina Jolie, you know, beautiful woman, talented actress, and you know, she's stepped out there, gotten involved with UNICEF, gotten involved with the United Nations, and is routinely just dragged through the mud by the right wing.
Yeah, and you know, the thing of it is, if somebody comes out against George Bush, and a few of them have and got together on it in a concerted type of action, then what they think don't matter. But if one of them comes out for them, then it's publicized heavy, and it makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's your typical Republican.
Well, Ed, I thank you for everything you've offered this evening, and let me put you back on hold, and that way you can finish out the program. We're going to get that computer fired up for you one of these days.
And within the next 3 weeks, maybe.
All right. Sounds good. Ed, you have a wonderful weekend, all right?
And you too, Bob.
Take care. Thank you so kindly.
Uh-huh.
Bye now. And onward and upward. Hey, you're head on. I'm sorry you weren't screened, or, well, we don't screen, but who have I got?
This is Diana. I talked to you last week, and I called you Bill.
Oh, okay. Well,
sorry about that.
Call me anything but late for dinner, okay?
Hey, Bob, I just wanted to say, I'm out here on the West Coast, and I wanted to thank that guy who stood out there by himself. I was out here in Olympia, and we didn't have the turnout we thought we would have, but I think up in Seattle they did a little better. But the thing I'm concerned about is it didn't seem like there was as big a turnout as I thought there would be overall. You know, I thought that we were expecting 2,000 people here in Seattle, and they only ended up with like 300 or 400.
Right.
And in New York, I guess they only had a few hundred or maybe 1,000. Or no, not New York. I guess it was Washington, D.C. They had 800.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of surprised, but maybe I'm immersed too much in the liberal side, and I don't see that people are getting, you know, informed about it. But also, I was
well, that was Seattle. That was Seattle. Was there anything going on in Olympia?
That's where I live.
I mean, we had
about 300.
Okay, my bad. I made an automatic assumption that you had about 300 there. There was I saw that it got at least a little stressy both in Seattle and Portland,
yeah,
I believe.
They just arrested two or three people, but that was no big deal there in Seattle. I don't know about Portland, but San Francisco, they really turned out there, but. Peter Gilliam's the director of Brazil.
Terry Gilliam.
Terry Gilliam, yeah.
See, we can process through all this, Diana.
But, you know, I really enjoy your show. You're really helping out with the withdrawal my husband and I feel about Mike Malloy.
Well, you know, I keep running by the web page, and I hope, you know, I'm hoping I'm going to see, you know, one of these days, you know, hey, we're on in so-and-so, you know. And, you know, the next thing where I begin to stress out, you know, Mike has always said, wherever I go, there will be streaming audio. And that's my concern, because I'm sitting here in the hills and hollers, and I'm going to have to get my fix.
Oh, absolutely. He was on this morning on MSNBC. I don't know if you guys caught him.
Mike was?
Yeah, on 6:30 this morning, our time.
Wow.
And it was, I don't know who it was who he had on. He was being interviewed by some woman. But, you know, the thing you're talking about, women, I'm not ashamed of my beauty, and it has helped me in some ways, but, you know, you can't fall back on that. You just use it for your own benefit, and you try and, you know, promote your own point of view.
Well, it started coming out of my mouth, and I realized that there was no way I could say what I was going to say and not come off as an ass, and I didn't mean to be that way.
Well, you know, the old idea of a dumb blonde, you know, that's not really true, and the gentleman before me, I mean, Katie Couric to me is not even that attractive. I think she looks kind of witchy. But
well, now the witches will take issue with you.
But anyhow, I just wanted to tell that guy who stood there alone, I'm proud of him.
I am too.
I know how hard that is. I told you last week I've done that myself.
Right.
And it takes a little courage. And I was high enough up off the freeway when I did it over the overpass that if they were flipping me off, I could hardly see that. But when they honk, you're usually saying, yeah, we agree with you. But I heard that they're doing this thing called freeway blogging.
Oh, yes.
Where, you know, this gentleman who called earlier, you can take a sign and put a dump bush or whatever you want. And, of course, you always have in your back window of your car. My back window is still full of stickers. I can barely see out the back of it. But I mean, I'm proud of myself for doing that.
Yes.
The voice in the wilderness. I mean, that's what we are. And if you're out there in the wilderness of West Virginia, we need your voice. You're very, very good. You're very articulate. You're funny. Your wife is sweet and funny. And you're great. But I'll let you go because it's quarter till, and I know you've probably got other callers.
Yeah, I got a couple I got to get to. Diana, it's always good hearing from you. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. And, you know,
enjoy the football game.
I'm going to try. You know, I got to listen to the radio to it, you know, and it's tough on me because when I listen to my Mountaineer games, I know I'm listening to a right-wing freak. Yeah,
they're out there. They sure are out there. But we're rising.
We are.
Rising like the boss says.
Yeah, and don't let the fact that there weren't, 500,000 people out there yesterday take you back, because the fact that you were there is what matters.
Well, I'm wondering if the problem wasn't that a lot of people are complacent because they see that things may be starting to turn, and so they think, well, we don't.
Yeah, somebody else will do the work.
Yeah, and they might be, complacent, but get out there and put that freeway blogging up, or put things on your car, or talk to people like you are. You were talking about just looking at people and not talking to people.
Yeah,
it's a big thing.
It is. And that takes courage, too. The stuff that you do by yourself takes a hell of a lot more courage, Diana, than the stuff that you do with the protection of a group around you.
That's right. Well, you guys hang in there.
All right. And you have a wonderful weekend, okay?
You too.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. And onward. Hi, you're head on. Who have I got?
Susan in Columbia City.
Hey, Susan. How are you?
Hanging in there.
That's right.
I know you like science fiction. Have you ever read any Andre Norton?
Oh, gosh, yes. I grew up on Andre Norton.
Okay. You remember a book called The Stars Are Ours?
That one may have escaped me.
Okay. If you're smart, get it and read it. Because it will. The woman was definitely seeing into the future. The whole basis of the thing is mankind had basically gotten into its near space, moon, and so on. And a bunch of terrorists got up in there. And they bombarded the Earth. Massive destruction. A religious leader, sound familiar?
Yeah.
Lost his entire family, went berserk. He preached the evils of science and took over the world. And in this book, this whole the whole thing is this community of hacks where they are simple men. They believe in back to the earth, and they hate scientists with passion. They kill them.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. Like, I think I may have mentioned, Susan, I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks to have a physician on the program who has recently written a book stating quite clearly that the next line of attack for the religious right will be medical science. And, I think, maybe that's a little bit of Coles to Newcastle when you get right down to it, because it's already underway.
Yeah.
When we have to sit there and look at the rest of the world and say, we're sorry, we can't do stem cell research because there are people here who think Jesus doesn't like it.
Yeah. But the whole thing, the whole society in this book is based on a hatred of science, the scientific method. Ignorance is held up to be wonderful, so on and so forth. In fact, you're looked upon with suspicion if you can read.
Oh Lord, and it's not unthinkable that could happen when you look,
yeah.
Susan. When you look at the assault on public education that is No Child's Behind Left,
yeah,
and you realize that thing is designed so that schools will fail and ultimately be closed.
Exactly.
You are moving toward an illiterate civilization. And the thing is, it gives me no pride to say this, but you go back maybe four or five generations in my family, and they're illiterate. They literally cannot read.
Yeah.
because they were too busy raising the crops and getting them in and reading, you know, and the preacher could always read the Bible to them, and that's as much reading as they needed. What they needed to do was keep eating. And that's the story. That's the story of life in any culture where you have no middle class and you and you've done everything in your power to create a minuscule upper class and a vast lower class. And that is where Republican politics will always take you.
Yeah. Well, if you look at your history, the British aristocracy, one of the biggest one of the things that propped that aristocracy up for as long as it did in its absolute power was the fact that they kept the lower classes totally illiterate.
Right.
Once they started to learn to read, then they started pulling themselves up out, and they then they forgot their place, and then they started demanding to be treated as human beings. And then, oh boy, Bunch T ended up in a harbor in Boston.
Well, don't tell Andy about that. He likes to think that was a big mistake. but no, there's truth in that. And Susan, the other thing that's worth remembering is, as I mentioned last night, it was damn near a capital crime for a white man to teach an African slave to read in this country 150 years ago.
It was a capital crime.
It's yes. And that's not that long back. And one of the things that most people don't understand, slavery probably reached its pernicious height in the American South before the Civil War, because slavery as it was described in ancient Rome or understood in ancient Greece or in most of the other ancient societies, you know, slaves could have money.
And they had a chance actually to not become slaves.
They had a chance at their manumission. They had a, and they were certainly allowed to be literate because, I think his name was Tiro, T-I-R-O, was the personal assistant of Cicero in ancient Rome. And he was incredibly literate and was rumored to have actually written a biography of Cicero. I know this because I was reading a review of a piece of fiction that's out now that purports to be the fictionalized account of what Tiro wrote. But he was incredibly literate, and that's a far cry. I mean, when you get to slavery in America, you get to the absolute Mount Olympus of the evils between one human being and another. No form of slavery in this world, I don't think, has ever been quite as evil as what was manifested in the United States.
There's even, in fact, they even preserved it. Why, I don't know personally. I think they could have raised the building. There's a building, I can't remember what state in the South it's in, where they were literally breeding slaves.
Oh, God. You know, I've been past the slave market, and how do those two words come out of my mouth in 2006? I've been past that in Mobile, Alabama, in Bardstown, Kentucky. I think it has since been removed, but in Bardstown, Kentucky, there used to be a stone that says, "Slaves stood here during the auctions," and it's right in front of, you know, it's right in front of the courthouse, right in front of the seat of justice in Nelson County, Kentucky. Amazing. Susan, I need to roll on because I want to make sure nobody gets left on hold tonight, okay?
Hey, you have a nice weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Susan from Columbia City, Oregon, who, by the way, goes into the credits as another manager of the news blog at headonradionetwork.com, in addition to our good friend Gene. And onward. Hi, who have I got?
Oh, it's me, Bob. It's
Jim. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Hi. I just wanted to direct your attention to this week's Time magazine and the Republican strategy.
Okay.
It will give you grist for your mill, particularly when it directs your attention to the amount of money and the focal points that they are using. And basically, it's giving us people are thinking there might be a change when the Republican surprise might be their money and their power, and it's just absolutely immense and awe-inspiring.
And that's
this week's Time.
Okay.
It has a picture of a child on it, and basically the deal with evolution. But I would suggest that you read it.
Well, I certainly will.
Might want to focus one of your parts of your program on what you think of that, because it is extremely alarming.
Well, I look forward to reading it then, and it'll probably show up at CNN.com as well, since they're tied in with Time.
Well, I just wanted to—I know it's not in line with what you were talking about.
Oh, no. We've been all over the board tonight, Jim. Don't worry.
Plus, you might want to take a look at that article.
All right, will do.
All right, good night.
Thank you very kindly. Bye now. Our good friend Jim in an undisclosed location somewhere in Raleigh County, West Virginia. And before I roll out, before the week ends, I want to point out one little thing that just drove me absolutely out of my mind today. Now, this was sent to me, and don't go there. Don't help them sell advertising. This comes from World Nut Daily, you know, the right-wing sickness. Headline: Grieving Amish raise money for killer's family. And you know what? I read that, and you would read that, and you'd go, oh, well, damn, that's impressive. In what's being called a stunning example of the imitation of Christ, the Amish community, devastated by the cold-blooded murder of five of its schoolgirls, is raising money for the killer's family. Oh, I'm right there with all of that. Amish residents of rural Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, have started a charity fund to help not only the victim's family, but also the mass murderer's widow and children, reports the New York Times today. Okay. The killer, Charles Kennedy, well, you know about that. Explaining the Amish way, Gertrude Huntington, an expert on children in Amish society, told the AP that Robert's Amish neighbors would probably be very supportive of the killer and his wife, quote, because judgment is in God's hands, judge not that ye be not judged. This is the part that made me want to claw the walls. Dwight Lefevre, a spokesman for the Roberts family, said an Amish neighbor comforted the killer's family and extended forgiveness to them after the shooting. Wait for a minute and let that one sink in. I can't imagine the consummate grief that must be flowing in Lancaster County. But you know what? There are some people in that county that are not in need of forgiveness. And the wee little children of that madman are first on that list. Do not trot out Christianity and tell me that you've done the right thing because you forgived, oh dear God, you forgave, man, because you forgave a killer's children. We do not visit the sins of the father upon the progeny thereof. Just watch for this kind of crap. And keep your ear to the ground. And hear the 440A of what it really means to be moral in this nation. I think it's noble that that family that is deprived of its breadwinner and its father, the guy held a job, for God's sakes. They're deprived of their breadwinner, they're deprived of a father that they loved. And they need help. They need support. But they don't need any forgiveness. And anyone who would suggest that they do is sicker and twisted than just about any monster I could point out to you in any penitentiary in this country. Now I'm at a rough spot because I don't know quite how to do the credits because I produced this program tonight. And did a right rotten poor job of it, I might add. But Agnes needed a night off, and I will not begrudge her that. Brian Reznor announces the program. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, on 1 week's vacation while he changes location and gets some new digs, he and his lovely partner, Gail. He's still the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network, and we appreciate everything he does. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, takes care of all the IT issues we have here, and Lord, do we have issues. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn. And we are partnered with Shelby LePre at RadioPower.org, who has done a fabulous job over the last several years streaming Internet content that is liberal and decent and honest. We have wonderful moderators at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. And, of course, our news editors, Susan and Jean, do a fabulous job at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com news blog. And the program happens, and every program happens, on the Head On Radio Network because there are several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights who get up and go to work every day, and they build the American dream, and by supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, always, always. RMR. It's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
When you're swallowing all life's lies,
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. If you're listening on the IE America Radio Network, welcome. Sirius Satellite Channel 145, Radio Left, welcome. WhiteRoseSociety.org, welcome. RadioPower.org, welcome. Program tonight is always produced by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman announces for us.